Take your seats, please. Thank you all for coming. I call this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox. It's my privilege to be your moderator tonight. I declare a quorum present. A few quick announcements. Coffee and snacks are being provided this evening by Girl Scout Troop 72458, which does extensive community service. They are currently working with the Historical Commission on the Hosmer House Garden Project, a renewal of the garden originally cultivated by Florence Hosmer. And the proceeds from the snacks are going to help out that function. We have a correction from last night just in the presentation. This is on Article 5, the capital budget. The presenter stated that the Friends of Goodnow Library were going to partially fund with $8,000 a new telephone system for the library. It turns out that it's not the Friends who are doing this, it's the library trustees from the library fund who are contributing the $8,000. I've been asked to correct that for the record. It was not in the motion, so there's no other correction that's necessary. I'd like to thank our Boy Scout runners tonight, Mark Tentarelli, Noah Green, and Emmett Al-Kassab from Troop 63, led by Fred Rust. Just a reminder to turn off all cell phones, which I'm about to do, and anything else that's audible. A couple reminders from last night. I'll be brief. Please give your name and address clearly each time you speak in order to assure an accurate record of the proceedings. And do not lower the microphone away from your mouth. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and the folks to Viewgraph in writing before they were made to the hall. As I mentioned last night, it's very important that you email any amendment to Mark Thompson, who's at the Viewgraph. Again, his email address is info@sudbury.ma.us. And the reasons, there's a number of reasons to do that. Number one, if you don't give it to him until just before you make the motion, he's going to have to sit there and type it. And if it's a long amendment, it's going to take a long time, and it's discourteous to the hall because the hall just sits there and waits for this amendment to be typed. Number two, I have to make a judgment as to whether or not that amendment is within the four corners of the article. If you give me a long amendment and I have to look at it, it may well be that it's not within the four corners just from its length alone. If you give it to me a couple of days in advance, I can look at it, I can work with you, and I can try to make sure that it's within the four corners of the article. The third reason is that it's possible that the presenter of the main motion that you're hoping to amend might agree with you once you show that person the amendment, that board, and explain to them what you're trying to do. And they may incorporate it into their motion, and there'll be no need for you to make an amendment and no need to take a chance that it might be voted down. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows in the back of the hall to my left and right. Reminder that presenters have a maximum of 10 minutes. The timer will ring at 5 minutes. Speaker will have a maximum of 5 minutes. Again, you do not have to feel compelled to lose all of your allotted time. A reminder that there's no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like before, during, or after the time someone is speaking. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a speaker, presenter, or a town official. I'm encouraging those who do not speak very often at town meeting to do so. We welcome your input. Another announcement, please leave your donation of food and or personal care products at your mailbox before mail delivery on Saturday, May 12th, which I believe is this coming Saturday. This is important and the largest single food drive for the Sudbury Community Food Pantry. The food pantry is 100% volunteer and open to all. To prevent breakage, please do not include items in glass containers. Donations may be placed in plastic bags or boxes and left at your mailbox or in it. Mark, do you have that announcement? Where might it be? I have some sad news, and I'd like you to please rise and join me in a moment of silence. Lance Corporal Michael Rohner, 23, of Sudbury, Mass., was found at approximately 9:15 a.m., according to base officials. Camp Pendleton Provost Marshal's office and paramedics responded to the scene. They began life support but were unsuccessful in resuscitating him. Thank you very much. We have extra warrants. Does anyone need a Boy Scout to bring them a warrant? If so, please raise your hand and keep it raised. Anybody? Okay, thank you. Bathrooms are across the hall from the auditorium. Emergency fire exits are at the back, either side of the auditorium in the back. And if you're unable to make it through there because of the crowd, you may go on either side of the stage. There's stairways on both sides. We are ready for Article 19. I'll ask Mike Melnick, co-chair of the Permanent Building Committee, for a motion.
Move to indefinitely postpone Article 19.
Is there a second for indefinite postponement? There is. Mr. Melnick.
Article 19 is part of a...
Mike, you have to get closer to the mic.
Okay, sorry about that. Article 19 is part of a larger project, and we're waiting actually for MSBA to vote us into this project, and we will bring this all forward to us during a special town meeting coming in September of this year.
Thank you. A Finance Committee have an opinion?
Finance Committee takes no opinion on this article.
Selectman, Mr. Hardy?
The Board of Selectmen support this motion.
Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. Are there any opposed? It's a unanimous vote. We'll move on. Thank you, Mr. Melnick. We'll move on to Article 20. And we'll have Michael Fee, Chairman of the Planning Board, to make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Fee.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The process for amending a local zoning bylaw is governed by state statute, General Laws Chapter 40A. And according to that statute, an amendment to a zoning bylaw can be proposed by almost any town board or any group of citizens. But it's required that the planning board hold a public hearing on that proposed amendment and then make recommendations and report to town meeting. In the years that I've been on the planning board, we've regularly brought forward various types of zoning, proposed zoning amendments to town meeting. And in my experience, the consideration of those various proposals have ranged from vigorous and spirited to debate to passage without a whiff of controversy. And if I had to guess, I would hope that Article 20 falls into the latter category. Now, as you know from your warrant, the Planning Board report is on page 15. and describes the fact that our current use table provides an exemption from zoning regulations for agricultural uses that take place on parcels of 5 acres or more. This exemption from zoning was consistent with state law until 2010, when our legislature changed the threshold at which an agricultural exemption would apply, and dropped it down to parcels of 2 acres or more, as long as those parcels generated at least $1,000 annually in agricultural-related sales. And so that change in state law necessitated an adjustment in our local bylaw. The purpose of Article 20 is only to accomplish that, to comport our bylaw with the state statute. But you should also be aware of the fact that the Planning Board supports the concept that we're proposing here tonight for a couple of reasons. First of all, making farming easier is something that is very consistent with General Bylaw 31, which is our right to farm bylaw enacted in 2008, and it's also consistent with our master plan. So for those reasons, we would urge your support of passage for Article 20.
Finance Committee have a position?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Okay, discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 20? I see no one. This is a two-thirds vote because it's a zoning amendment. So all those in favor of Article 20 signify by raising your cards. The motion is shown on the view graph, actually. All those opposed, it's a unanimous vote. We're going to move on to Article 21. Planning Board, Mr. Fee, for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I would move in the words of the article, except changing footnote Roman numeral 5 to footnote Roman numeral 7.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Fee?
Mr. Moderator, before I begin, may I ask you a question?
Please.
Do you know why the chicken crossed the road?
Go right ahead, Mr. Fee.
Well, it's to engage in vigorous and spirited debate on Article 21, of course. He's taking my time now, I know. The purpose of Article 21 is to change our bylaw so that a special permit will no longer be required for persons who wish to raise poultry other than roosters. Section 2313 of the bylaw currently states that the Board of Appeals is the permit-granting authority for persons who wish to raise swine, poultry, or fur-bearing animals, etc. The proposal in your warrant would change the word poultry to the word, insert the word roosters for the word poultry. And what that would accomplish is requiring persons who wanted to have a rooster, who are traditionally noisy, to go before the Zoning Board of Appeals and go through the process associated with getting that type of relief. Persons who chose to have chickens instead and the lesser impact that they bring to neighborhoods would not be required to go through that process. One caveat that you should understand, whether someone wanted to raise chickens or roosters or ducks or geese or any kind of poultry, all of that activity is always going to be subject to the regulations of the Board of Health, who has the jurisdiction to look after all types of farming activities in town. So even though a person who avoided the special permit requirement by raising chickens instead of roosters, they would still be subject to some oversight in the form of annual inspections by the Board of Health. As I mentioned before, we are a right to farm town. We have a bylaw that supports this type of activity. This is also something that the Agricultural Commission feels strongly about and has brought to our attention many times over the years. We feel it's consistent with our master plan and a article that's worthy of support. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
Takes no position on this article.
Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Discussion. Anybody wish to be heard? Mr. Tyler.
Mark Thompson have one of those?
Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane.
Mark, can you put that up right away? Do you have to type that out?
No.
Okay. It's on the, this is a, I'm going to be making a motion to amend.
Why don't you make the motion to amend?
Yeah, I want to get the, which is this the question?
Yeah.
So tell me how this works. Just hit this one?
No.
This one over here. Okay. Move to amend the motion for Article 21 by replacing the words, quote, section 2313 to substitute the word roosters for the word poultry in that section with the following. Revising section 2313 by adding the following after the end of said section. However, up to 6 female chickens are allowed without a special permit for 12 months if the landowner obtains a 12-month $10 chicken permit from the building inspector and complies with the following rules. 1. Roosters over the age of 3 months are absolutely prohibited. 2. The chickens shall be provided with a clean, pest-free, covered, predator-proof coop that is adequately ventilated and of sufficient size to permit free movement of the chickens. 3. Chickens must be kept in said coop from sundown to sunrise. When not in the coop, chickens must be kept in a predator-proof fenced area at all times. 5. Stored feed must be kept in a rodent and predator-proof container. 6. The coop and predator-proof fenced area are prohibited from front yards or side yards and must be set back at least 100 feet from all property lines. With the written permission of the abutting landowner, the 100-foot property line setback may be reduced as agreed in said writing, but shall be no less than 15 feet. Any abutting owner may withdraw such written permission at any time, and any such permission shall be valid. Oh, this is all written here. Sorry. No, you're wondering, what's he reading from? Sorry. We're up here in a 6 now. Any abutting owner may withdraw said written permission at any time, and any such permission shall be valid for no more than 12 months from the date of execution of said permission. 7. It is unlawful for the owner, custodian, or keeper of any chicken to allow the animals to be a nuisance to any neighbors, including but not limited to obnoxious odors from the animals or their enclosure and noise of a loud and persistent and habitual nature. The building inspector may revoke any 12-month chicken permit and impound the chickens if upon inspection it is found that any of these rules have been violated. Further, if the building inspector has not received any complaints during the preceding 12 months about a previously issued 12-month chicken permit, the landowner may apply for a new 12-month $10 chicken permit. Otherwise, a special permit shall be required before the landowner shall be permitted to continue to raise chickens on their property.
Mr. Tyler, I have to make a judgment as to whether or not that's within the four corners of the article.
Okay.
You made a good argument that because this is going from all chickens needing a special permit to no chickens needing a special permit, that you could probably do something in between.
Exactly right.
Agree. And that's a good argument, and I accept that. So if you want to stop this amendment after up to 6 female chickens are allowed without a special permit and put a period there, I'll accept that as being within the four corners of the article.
And your problem with the rest of it?
Well, you have a whole bunch of conditions here. First of all, there's a fee. Secondly, you're mandating how these coops have to be maintained. You're saying giving time when the chickens have to be in there. You're adding a clause that I frankly don't think is constitutional, that the abutter within 100 feet, the abutter would have a 100-foot setback requirement from the chickens, and that the abutter can reduce it to 15 feet. That's what the zoning board is for. That's not what abutters generally do. So, more importantly, there's a lot of good ideas here.
Absolutely.
But none of these were within the four corners of this article, other than saying you want six female chicken.
Well, aren't these some of the conditions that would allow these six chickens? So if you don't meet any of these, then you're back to where you were before. So in other words, this is a conditional six chickens. And conditionally six chickens, I believe, are within the four corners. I'd ask you to reconsider.
No, the six chickens are definitely within the four corners. All these other conditions, numbers 1 through 7, are outside the four corners.
So do I have any appeal, or are you the final?
Well, if it makes you feel better, I'd ask our town council about it before the meeting, and that's his opinion also.
Well, I guess...
I would suggest two things. One,
go
again,
with the flow is what I say.
If you want to leave it at the six chickens, I'll let the amendment in, and the town can vote on it. If it stops right there after the after the first line, up to six female chickens are allowed.
Okay. Well, we'll go with the flow. Yeah, I'll.
Okay.
Some is better than all.
Okay. So it's going to read. Can you get the Mark? Can you get us to the beginning there? This is the amendment, right? Okay. Which would permit by right an unlimited no.
Ralph, good thing it wasn't rabbits.
Okay, I'm going to read it. It's real short.
Yeah.
If we can find it, that's great. So it's going to read the same.
So.
Move to amend Article 21. By revising Section 2313 of the zoning bylaw by adding the following after the end of said section. However, up to six female chickens are allowed without special permit, period. Is that acceptable to you, Ralph? I put a period after.
Yes.
Six. Okay.
It's a disappointing acceptableness.
I would suggest to you that you have some good ideas here. Bring it up to the if this thing passes, bring it up to the planning board to add conditions to the zoning bylaw. We just need to. What I need to do is, people who read this warrant and said, "Oh, if that's what the planning board wants to do, there aren't any conditions. I'm okay with that." And now they didn't come to this town meeting, and there's all sorts of conditions now that they were unaware of.
I understand. Okay. Well, let's.
Does that receive a second, this new amendment? The first one never did, so it does. Mr. Tyler.
Obviously, this is what the present article without amendment allows. If without any numerical limits, if you decide to put up some sort of industrial type of thing on your property, it can happen. Might be like this. You can laugh, but once a use like this is established under zoning bylaw, you have absolutely no power to revoke that use by a subsequent amendment to the zoning bylaw. So if somebody does this and we say, whoops, well, we made a mistake, the neighbors, that neighborhood, would have to live with this until the owner decides to terminate it voluntarily. So it seems funny, but it's possible, and that's what this is designed to address. So at some point, there is a level which, you know, is compatible, I think, with what most people think of in a residential neighborhood. One thing you don't want is the chickens running over your yard, so you want some kind of fencing and stuff like that, but we weren't allowed to put that in. So maybe this is, you know, the kind of thing that we're looking for, maybe something like that. We all want to see this, you know, love that, right? But you know, this is the present language for 2313. As the planning board's report says, for the most part, these are not creating problems, which means that occasionally they do. And so we've basically, with this amendment, we've taken off, without this amendment, we've taken off all restrictions. And no matter whether it's offensive to the neighbors or not, there's simply nothing a neighbor can do if they're offended, as long as the people comply with the Board of Health. So as I understand that, that means they can, their coop can be out in the front yard, perhaps out by their mailbox if they want, you know, kind of trashing the neighborhood, et cetera. But again, you know, we're limited from even addressing that. So I'd urge you to, you know, support the limit on the number of chickens, so that at least we get that. And so I urge that you vote for this reduced amendment, and then I would urge that you vote to defeat the article in its entirety, because I think it's unwise as proposed, and without the extra conditions, I think there's more mischief that can come about. Because, for example, if someone decides to put a chicken coop up in the middle of their front yard or right next to their property line and you don't like it, you may have to live with that for the rest of your stays in Sudbury, whether that be for the next 15 years or the next 35 years. You'll not be able to do anything about it. So I urge you to vote for this amendment, and then I urge you to vote to defeat the motion as amended.
Thank you. Mark, around? Mark?
Can you tell me where that came from? From where this came from?
Yeah,
from Ralph. Can you take it off?
Yeah.
Okay. We're now going to discuss just the amendment, not the whole article. Keep in mind that the motion is made by the planning board, the original motion, requires a two-thirds vote. Also, please keep in mind that this amendment, which we're going to vote on shortly, requires only a majority vote. Okay. Mr. Fee from the planning board wishes to address the amendment.
Just would like to inform the hall that Mr. Tyler shared this proposed amendment with us prior to arriving here tonight. We met in joint session with the Agricultural Commission prior to this evening's meeting. Both boards voted unanimously to oppose this amendment. The and I agree with the moderator's statement that many of these represent excellent ideas, but it's a mistake from our standpoint to sit and try to over-regulate the use on town meeting floor. As I suggested earlier, the Agricultural Commission is highly involved in preparing appropriate regulations, and the Board of Health has also stated its intent to develop a set of regulations that would prevent the parade of horribles that Mr. Tyler suggested might happen if we allowed unregulated chickens, female chickens, in Sudbury. So that's the Planning Board's and the Agricultural Commission's position on the amendment.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment? Okay. Again, this is a majority vote. I'm sorry? Let's stand up. Great. Yeah. No. Just flip the switch and try it again. We got another mic coming. Matt, why don't you just speak real loudly? It's not going to work.
The original article was a rare opportunity for us to have less government regulation.
let's not ruin it with this stuff. You know, next year it'll be a chicken leash law or something like that. I think in my experience, any problems between neighbors are usually handled by eggs. So the chicken farmer can give their neighbor some eggs, and I'm sure whether it's 100 feet or 10 feet, it'll be fine. So let's not ruin this one thing by making more regulations rather than less.
Thank you. Can I ask the Boy Scouts to test out those mics to see if they're working now? There we go. That works. Terrific. Anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment? Please, can you bring a mic down here? And is the mic on right now? There we go. It's on.
Peter Kramer. It's on. Peter Kramer, Singletary Lane. I have chickens. I have 8, started off with 10. Just addressing this amendment, I would say the number should be raised from 6 to 12. I don't see an individual homeowner being able to cope with more than 12 eggs. I mean, 12 hens at a time. You get an awful lot of eggs, but that would be sort of the upper limit. So I just think that 6 might be too low for some people. Just with regard to this amendment, it should be higher, and that's all.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment? Okay. I see no one else. So we're going to, again, there's the amendment up there. It's going to be, however, up to 6 female chickens are allowed without a special permit, and that's going to amend the main motion. All those who are in favor of that amendment signify by raising your cards. About a dozen and a half votes in favor of it. All those opposed, it is defeated overwhelmingly. We're now going to be talking about the main motion. And this, again, requires a two-thirds vote. Does anybody wish to be heard on the main motion, which hopefully very shortly will be on the screen? There it is. It's the words in the warrant with the one change. All those, did you want to speak to the main motion?
Well, I do understand that there's an anti-government movement in the country, and one of the things that makes Sudbury such a unique and wonderful town to live in is the fact that we do have some reasonable regulations. Our forefathers, when they put in the one-acre zoning and put in a lot of the land use regulations that we currently enjoy, are one of the reasons we're the kind of town that we are. This unamended article has the potential to destroy a neighborhood. That's a fact. Once a use is established under the zoning bylaw, it becomes a use as of right forever. You cannot pass a whoops, we made a mistake bylaw to correct it. So this is irrevocable. It's the same thing that's if you don't like the neon sign up there by the Bank of America building at that cleaners, you think it's the wrong color or something, that it could be there for as long as we all live, who knows. So I just urge defeat of this article. As I said, even the planning board chairman, I believe, who spoke said some of these were, Mr. Tyler had some really good ideas. Well, I think that basically says that we ought to defeat this and put it back to the committee to study it more and to come up with something reasonable, because the Board of Health cannot regulate setbacks. They cannot regulate whether it's in the front yards, et cetera, et cetera. And frankly, you just never know who's going to move in next door and how crazy they might be.
Mr. Tyler, what you mentioned that once you get a special permit, you have it forever. Is that what you said?
No. When you what this is doing is establishing a use by right to have an unlimited number of chickens.
Okay.
And that is forever.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Could you stand up and get a mic? Can we get a mic over there?
Have one. Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road. My question is, it states roosters as in plural. Are you trying to regulate a rooster or somebody having multiple roosters?
Mr. Fig.
We read the language to require one rooster or more than one rooster being subject to the special permit requirement. Yes, I don't, we'll look at it to see if that's confusing, but it's not, certainly not ambiguous to me. I think all roosters in town would be regulated, whether it's one at a particular residence or many.
Ms. Cadillac, do you have the zoning bylaw there? Can you, Mr. Fee, take a peek at that and see where that is in conjunction with that? You'd have to, Mr. Hill, you'd have to read that in conjunction with what the bylaw says now. So we're going to get an answer for that momentarily. Anybody else wish to be heard on the main motion? Okay. Yes, could you stand up, please? Can you get a mic to this gentleman? It should be on.
Joseph Honorato, 2 Leanne Circle. I'm going to propose that we should defeat this motion, and the wording is ill-considered. It changes poultry, which is a general term, into a very specific term, rooster. It doesn't address things like ducks and geese, which can be aggressive. It doesn't address turkeys. It doesn't address ostriches, which are another barnyard fowl. And this is just not the approach to getting farming here. And the wording is just not well enough thought out to put it into law.
Thank you. Do we have an answer on the rooster question?
This is to Mr. Hill's question. The current zoning bylaw language 2313 reads, the Board of Appeals may grant a special permit for the non-exempt raising of swine, poultry, fur-bearing animals, and the operation of kennels. When you substitute roosters for poultry, all of the descriptions are plural. So I would suggest that that's consistent.
Thank you. Stand up, please. We have the Agricultural Committee. Could someone from that group stand up? And
Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road, Sudbury Agricultural Commission, speaking on my own unless the other members want to agree. Since 2007, there have only been two issues that have arisen, and both of them have had to do with a rooster or roosters. The whole movement for local food, local fresh eggs, the LS High School gives talks on backyard chickens. This is a local movement, a food movement. And this is basically to deal with the two roosters that issues that we have had since 2007. There are many people with backyard chickens, and this is just to alleviate the encumbersome effort on the regulations and the permitting process for the families that just want to have some backyard chickens and fresh eggs.
Anybody else wish to be heard before the vote? Mr. Tyler?
But this is not just for backyard chickens. It also permits front yard chickens and side yard chickens.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the main motion? Could you stand up, sir? Can you come around to the front, the Boy Scout? Can you come around to the front here? Thank you.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. This is a question. Would those two roosters who are currently causing a problem do actually require permits currently? Is that true?
Mr. Fee, do the two problem roosters require a permit under the current bylaw?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Could you stand up, please? And up front here, can you bring this mic around? Is the mic coming right to you?
Carol Hanauer, 48 Old Lancaster Road. The only problem I have with the amendment is that it removes the possibility of oversight by either the health department or the agricultural department over humane treatment and proper housing conditions for the chickens. Other than that, I'm fine with it.
No, I don't think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think it removes any Board of Health regulations that they may have on.
Okay.
Is that correct? Yes.
So it's only the agricultural, only the agricultural commission that would, whose oversight would be removed.
I don't know. The agricultural commission doesn't have oversight over this.
Okay.
It's the zoning board that has jurisdiction over all, in addition to the Board of Health.
Okay.
Has the town bylaw with respect to this, and what this article does is remove chickens from that.
Okay, then I hope we do pass the bylaw, pass the amendment.
So you're in favor?
Yes.
Yes, over there. Stand up, please.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I have a very real question based on the gentleman from Thompson Drive's question. When we change this from poultry to roosters, what happens to any regulation for ducks or geese, or I'm not expecting an ostrich, but are they now covered somehow, or are they now totally exempt also? That's unclear.
Mr. Fee.
Chicks and ducks and geese are exempt. By removing the word poultry and specifying the word rooster, we're saying you only need to get a special permit for that type of poultry. All other types of poultry would be exempt from the special permit requirement.
Yes. Out in front, could you stand up, please?
Peg Espinola, Goodman's Hill Road. I actually live next door to 8 lovely chickens and a few ducks who have the run of my yard. It's okay with me. I think if it weren't, they would not. But my question is, how onerous is the permitting process for people like my neighbor who I know went through it? Is this really such a problem, or is it more an ideological issue?
How onerous it is? Well, you'd get two different answers. If you get asked the Board of Appeals, you'd get one answer. If you ask the petitioner, you might get a different answer. Basically, you file an application, you pay an application fee, and you have a hearing before the Board of Appeals. And your neighbors are notified, and if they object, that's the time that they would appear before the Board of Appeals and object. And then the Board of Appeals decides whether or not they're going to issue a special permit. Normally, if there's someone from the Board of Appeals, normally the Board of Appeals gives two-year permits that are renewable thereafter. Is that correct? The answer is yes, that is correct, according to a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals. We have another member who wants to disagree with the first member. Don't you give two-year special permits, is the question. Hang on. Mike, please.
I'm Beth Quirk, 20 Scotswood Drive, chair of the zoning board. We have only, I think, ever given 2 chicken permits. Most of the coops in town, I would think, are unregulated currently. And we typically, with any special permit, grant a 1-year permit for the first year to see how it goes. And thereafter, we are usually agreeable to longer terms. I like to think we're a fairly friendly board, so it's not a terribly onerous process, but it definitely is a procedure that has to be gone through if someone does currently want to have a legal chicken coop.
Yes, and I would agree with that. The point being that it's a renewable permit. As I understand it, it's 1 year the first year, then 2 years thereafter, perhaps. And that if the neighbor has some problems at the renewal time, they come back and t- tell the board that they're having this problem, and the board has the ability to put conditions on that. That's what special permits are all about. Can we hear from someone who hasn't spoken yet? Anybody else wish to be heard on this? No. Yes, ma'am. Okay, why don't we hang on one second. Thank you, Mr. Fee.
This speaks to your point and the point earlier from this side of the room. I misspoke. The word poultry refers to the male of any type of, roosters refers to the male of any type of poultry. So I apologize for misspeaking earlier. So when I suggested that all ostriches would be unregulated, that's incorrect. The only the males would be subject to the special permit.
Okay. I see no other questions. Hang on, the question's been called. How many people wish to add some new information to this discussion? Raise your card. One, two. For the guidance of the hall, if there hadn't been enough discussion, I wouldn't allow the call of the question. There has been some discussion, so we're going to let the call of the question be vote. Let the fact that two people wish to add new information be guidance to you. So, having said that, all those, is there a second to the call of the question? If there is, it's 2/3 vote. All those in favor of calling the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it gets well more than 2/3 vote. We're moving on to the main motion, which is on the view graph. It requires a 2/3 vote. All those in favor of the motion as it appears on the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it is not close. It is defeated. It does not receive a 2/3 vote. We're going to move on to Article 22. Senior residential community, who's making the motion? Eric Polk of the Planning Board is making the motion. Please.
Moving the words of the article, Mr. Moderator.
Yep, receive a second. It does.
Article 22, Senior Residential Housing Community Bylaw, was adopted in 1997 at the annual town meeting, and since its adoption has been used three times, producing senior housing developments at Springhouse Pond, Mahoney Farms, and Maple Meadows. In all 95 units of age-restricted housing on developable parcels of land that would have been developed into a total of 37 single-family houses took place. The success of this bylaw is evident in both the quality and the popularity of these developments. This bylaw was Sudbury's first foray into zoning for multiple family attached housing, and there was a significant amount of trepidation at the time of its initial adoption about changing the character of the town and a general distaste for this style of housing. The planning board proceeded cautiously at first, allowing SRC developments only on parcels of 35 acres or more. We tested the waters and discovered that once built, SRCs are an appropriate land use for several reasons. Since they are restricted to seniors, they bring in a significant tax revenue with few incremental costs. They provide seniors with a housing option formerly unavailable and one which reduces the burden of property maintenance. We believe the bylaw has been successful in giving seniors the option to stay in Sudbury and is generally a good one for the town. Recently, the Planning Board was approached by the Council on Aging, who said that they would like to see more senior housing built in Sudbury and expanding the options for seniors even further. They were concerned that the requirements that SRCs can be developed only on parcels of 20 acres or more was becoming too restrictive and thought the bylaw would be better utilized if the parcel size was smaller. The Planning Board reviewed the SRC parcel size in comparison with other residential special permit development bylaws that we administer and found that all other residential development bylaws use a threshold of 10 acres. We discussed the ramifications of reducing the parcel size, including holding public hearings, and found that smaller developments could be built, but not so small as to intrude on traditional single-family neighborhoods. For example, an average 10-acre parcel with 1 acre of wetland could yield approximately 10 lots. This would translate into roughly 17 SRC units. Like many zoning bylaws, the SRC bylaw has already been tweaked several times since its adoption. We reduced the parcel size from 35 acres to 20 acres in 1999 and made several other minor adjustments as well. All of these changes have made the bylaw more attractive as an alternative to a single-family subdivision. With the over 55 demographic continuing to increase, affording additional housing options for this segment of the population makes good economic sense and is in the spirit with the town master plan. We urge your approval of this article.
Mr. Jacobson, the Finance Committee?
Takes no position on this article.
Mr. O'Brien?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 22? Please stand. Could you bring a mic to the front of the hall here? Now this gentleman is standing.
Dave Levington, 155 Knobscot Road. The Council on Aging supports this article and commends the Planning Board for their work. We'd like to also point out that, as was pointed out, there were no over 55 condos in Sudbury 15 years ago. Today there are 178 such properties paying taxes in town. The taxes paid by these 178 properties total about $1.3 million, about twice what Raytheon pays. We think it's a wonderful use of town land. We commend the Planning Board. We think this is good for all hens and roosters of any age.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, please stand. Please.
I just have a question. Laurie Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. How many 20-acre parcels of land are there left in Sudbury, and how many 10-acre parcels? What are we talking about on acreage here?
We'll try to get an answer for you. We might have an answer for you right now.
I'm not sure on the 20-acre, but there are approximately 18 10-acre parcels.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? I see no one. This requires a two-thirds vote. It's amending the zoning bylaw. All those in favor of the motion as shown in the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. There's a few people opposed. It passes by well more than two-thirds. We're going to move on to Article 23. Ms. Kavlak, the Director of Community and Housing and Community Development, Planning, and all sorts of things.
Move in the words of the article.
That receive a second. It does. Ms. Kavlak.
Good evening. Jody Kavlak, Director of Planning and Community Development. I don't know why anyone can't. That doesn't just roll off your tongue. Speaking on behalf of the Planning
Board. You have 2 minutes left.
This article seeks to amend the recently adopted stormwater management bylaw, which this town meeting adopted in 2009. And we adopted it in 2009 in response to state and federal mandates for enhanced environmental protection of surface and groundwater supplies. This is something that's going on throughout the country. And we've taken this quite seriously over the past 2 years. The Planning Board has issued over 40 permits under the bylaw. And at this point, we feel that some of the provisions are overly restrictive, particularly on single-family homeowners and small projects on commercial business properties. And with experience to guide us, we're proposing 7 small changes to the bylaw to streamline the permitting process without sacrificing environmental quality. And if you read through in your warrants, I will go just very briefly through each section so that you can understand them a little bit better. It's a fairly technical bylaw, but I'll be available to answer any questions that you have. So sections A and B, I should have this open as well just so that I see it. Okay, sections A and B revise the provisions of the general stormwater permit, which is an administrative permit granted by the town staff, and it doesn't rise to the level of requiring a public hearing and a full permit with the planning board. The general permit does require adherence to the stormwater regulations, but can be obtained quickly if the applicant and the materials are complete and provisions to capture and treat stormwater are proposed in the application. So Section A in the warrant, starting on page 16, allows slightly more intense development to occur on a lot without having to apply for the full permit. And the change that we are providing here is really just dealing with pavement and repavement of parcels of land in commercial, industrial, institutional, or exempt use. And we are removing the words repaving. So if you already have an impervious surface parking lot, an asphalt parking lot, and you are repaving it, you are not now captured under the bylaw with this proposed revision. And we're increasing the threshold to say you can pave up to 5,000 square feet of new property without having to go through the full bylaw. So we will still capture properties that are repaving even small areas from 500 square feet on, and as we will require those properties to enact drainage regulations and put structures in commensurate with the size of the project, but they will not have to go to a full public hearing. So it's a small change, but it will allow a little bit more flexibility for commercial properties. Section B is another very small change which clarifies the regulation on installation of utility lines, which have to go through some permitting but not the full permit. But we will also include sewer or septic lines. Those words were missing from the original bylaw. Okay, Section C and D now pertain to the more onerous full stormwater permit, which is applicable to larger projects or those that may generate more stormwater impacts. These revisions that we're proposing slightly increase the thresholds, again, for resurfacing projects on commercial properties and also development on hilly properties, which will place smaller projects of both pavement on commercial properties and development on hilly properties under the general stormwater application, which will require less of a permit for those permits. So, again, what we are hoping to do is streamline the permitting process without sacrificing environmental protection. Section E seeks to exempt normal maintenance of town roads and infrastructure from the bylaw, which is customary, but it wasn't explicitly stated in the bylaw originally. And then finally, Sections F and G clarify the provisions in the bylaw by defining a commonly used term and that's used throughout the bylaw and the regulations, which is the reviewing agent that was previously undefined. So these revisions will enable the planning board to administer this bylaw more efficiently, and we urge your support, and I will definitely take any questions if there are any.
Mr. Jenkinson, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position.
Mr. Dubinsky, Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 23? I see no one. This is a majority vote because it's not amending the zoning bylaw, it's amending our town bylaws. Majority vote. All those in favor of the motion, as shown in the view graph, signify by raising cards. All those opposed. It's a unanimous vote. We move on to Article 24, and this is the first of many CPC articles. And Chris Morley, the chairman of the committee, he will be allowed to make, as chairman, what we've done in past town meetings is allow him to make an overall statement of the CPC and these articles, and then we'll have other individuals make the presentation under each motion. Mr. Morley.
I can't remember. Do I read the motion first and then speak?
Yes.
Okay, even though I'm not. Okay. Moving the words of the article with the sum of $50,000 appropriated.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? And Mr. Morley, I take it that's exactly the same as in the warrant, except it says approximately 50, and now this is definitely 50,000. Thank you.
All right. Before we get to that, thank you. Good evening, all. As you said, I'm
Chris Morley, and my name will be up there sometime soon. Elected member of the Planning Board and the chair of the Community Preservation Committee. As either co-chair or chair, I've given this address now for 7 town meetings, and what I try to do each time in a short time is to highlight the key elements of how Sudbury has adapted the state's Community Preservation Act to its own purposes, a flexibility which is designed into the Act. Tonight, I plan to show you where CPA Sudbury funding comes from and has come from since its inception, where it goes to, and to touch on how we try to manage the program and its financing for a stable, ongoing success. This, yes, is where the majority of CPA Sudbury funding comes from, you, the taxpayers. For most households, the CPA surcharge is calculated as 3% of the real estate taxes that you would have paid had your assessment been $100,000 lower than it is. Seniors who are otherwise exempt and commercial properties pay no surcharge. The program asks most homeowners to pay a small amount each year so that over time we may accomplish big things. Here is what those surcharges have added up to over 9 years, plus the big bonus of the CPA statute, state matching monies totaling over $8 million. That's over $8 million plus $500,000 in an additional state grant that we got for one of our CPA projects, almost $9 million in state revenue for Sudbury CPA. And we get to spend most of it on an effort that the town already decided in the 1990s to begin taxing itself for. That would be the preservation of open space land. Here it is plain to see that Sudbury has utilized the flexibility of the CPA statute to create a long-term program to prevent the development of as yet largely undeveloped land. Why are we doing this? We preserve open space land for many reasons. The more historically focused among us would like to retain some connection to the town's agricultural past, trying to maintain the look and feel of the town before its transformation away from that takes hold entirely. Others are more focused on our stewardship of the ecosystem in which we live. Almost everyone likes to live around it, to drive by it, to walk on it, to imagine or experience it up close as a home to other living creatures. There is an economic self-interest at play here, too. Most open space can also be termed undeveloped house lots. New construction homes today are rarely without young families in them, and the larger, more expensive homes tend to have family sizes that are larger than the 1.8 children per household that is a statistical average. Even at 1.8, only the odd, very large new homes are initially net positive to the town. Most every new construction home starts out as a tax loss and will remain so far into the future. Here we see in another way that by no means is open space preservation all that CPA Sudbury is about. Clearly the 49 other projects greatly exceed the 12 land preservation ones. But as for most of us, buying real estate is the most expensive thing that we do. I want to quickly focus on the first two items here. For one, the dollars actually spent to date on open space is not the 72% that we saw in a prior slide. This is because managing and financing CPA Sudbury for stable ongoing success, as I touted in my opening, depends first upon the long-term bonding of real estate purchases, and second upon the accumulation of cash reserves for times when borrowing is not the preferred option. Had most homeowners in this room waited until they could purchase a home with cash, they would probably not be in this room. And all of us know the prudence of building up our liquid assets for an unanticipated economic event, car failure, layoff, family illness, etc. Though different, this is pretty much the same concept. Tonight we will present to you land deals that fully utilize these two handmaidens of our financing. One is an unanticipated purchase of a smaller property for cash. The other is a planned for, hoped for, and saved for acquisition that we have discussed previously at town meeting and numerous times before the Finance Committee, but one whose actual timing was unknown. The purchase of development rights to Pantry Brook Farm involves a new example of the ways in which the CPC, town staff, outside financial consultants, and the FinCom worked together over time to achieve the town's goals. The CPC knew that a large portion of the unreserved fund balance, or the available savings of $7.4 million that we had accumulated, would be utilized at any Pantry Brook deal. In fact, $4.35 million of it will be used. However, rather than presenting a check for this amount at the closing and another one from borrowing for the difference, the town will instead be bonding this entire purchase. The $4.35 million in cash reserves will instead be used to pay off older debt, which carries an interest rate nearly double of what the town is able to obtain today. The savings in doing the deal this way will be an estimated and nifty $250,000. In the way that carrying a home mortgage and building savings at the same time is similar in concept to what we do, this plan is like refinancing that mortgage to take advantage of a lower rate, except that it's way more complicated. I will touch a little on this later in Article 33, which is where the $4.35 million gets allocated for this purpose. I will leave you with a peek at the substantial list of Sudbury properties which, in an ideal world, will never be developed. For now, let's begin the CPC articles by moving on to Article 24. And Jim Kelly will make the presentation.
Mr. Kelly's our building inspector.
Thank you. My name is Jim Kelly. I am the building inspector for the town of Sudbury, and I am here tonight to present Article 24. Town Hall Architectural and Design Study. This project seeks $50,000 for a design and architectural study to renovate and restore the Sudbury Town Hall into usable town offices. The 2002 Townwide Comprehensive Facility Study identified space needs throughout the town and school departments and recommended alterations to the town hall to accommodate administrative offices in a variety of scenarios. One of the main goals of the space needs study was to find alternative space for the Sudbury Public School offices, which have been housed temporarily in the Fairbank building for over 20 years. This has created space problems for both the Council on Aging and the Park and Recreation Department, and has yet not been resolved. The current thinking is to create office space in Town Hall and rearrange other offices to adequately house the Sudbury Public School offices outside the Fairbank building and into the Flynn building. Scenarios for renovation and restoration of Town Hall in the 2002 study included creating additional office space on the first floor, creating offices on the second floor, and building an addition to the rear or side of the building. None of the scenarios illustrated in the 2002 study completely address the issues and configurations of current-day thinking, but an updated design and architectural study, including presentation of alternatives, will focus on the present-day needs of the school and town departments. This is a picture of the old town hall, located just next to First Parish. The old town hall was built in 1846, and it burned down 84 years later. Fortunately, the old town hall had a state-of-the-art vault for its time, and many precious documents were saved from the fire and now are preserved in our new town hall vaults. The new town hall was built after the fire in 1932. When it was built, it housed all town offices, the fire department, a branch library. The assembly rooms were used by the schools and also by the residents for banquets and socials. The building is a replication of the original 1846 town hall. The architect, who was also on the building committee, was Charles Way of Candy Hill Road. The cost of the new town hall was $80,000. The new building was built across Concord Road on land purchased from the Haynes family, 12 acres for $15,000. So some possible opportunities. The picture on the left is the Ashland Town Hall. It's the second floor auditorium after renovations. They had a similar floor plan to our town hall and changed their second floor auditorium into usable office space for town offices. The picture on the right is our second floor now. It's used by the Historical Society. This slide shows potential for creating office space and the possibility of preserving the interior architectural features. Other possibilities for creating office space and providing accessibility to the building are adding over the clerk's office and bringing out the gable end over the old fire station. The existing driveway seems to be a natural location to use for an addition to the building. So this is not the way we're going green. This is an older picture, actually. The roof has since been replaced. But this shows a portion of the building that perhaps would be an opportunity to build an addition going up. This was an addition built in the 1950s to increase space for the Sudbury Fire Department and town offices. This is a picture of the roof. It's a slate roof that is 80 years old. It has been said that a slate roof will last forever. However, the fasteners and the flashings will not. The nails that hold the slate are rusting and starting to fall off. The flashings around the chimneys and the roof edges are copper, and they are starting to wear out, and they will have to be replaced soon. This vestibule's, nope, good thing I looked. This vestibule structure was built about 15 years ago, I'm not really sure. At the time, I suppose it met a need in a budget. But there's probably a better looking and functioning solution. If you've ever been at a meeting in the lower town hall during a cold and windy winter night, when that door opens and the cold air comes in, I think you'll know what I'm saying. These are the bathrooms now. These are current bathrooms. So these pictures, I say, speak for themselves. This is the town hall boiler on the left and the backup power generator on the right. The boiler was replaced about 20 years ago. However, the steam pipes are original at 80 years old. You know you have a problem when during a winter night last season, Art Richard, checking on the heat late at night, found steam coming out of the concrete floor. The steam pipes under the floor are disintegrating. On the right is a generator that backs up power to the traffic lights at the center. I understand that the generator was a hand-me-down from the police department, and they got it from the schools as a hand-me-down. So it served us well. The architectural and design study will identify needed repairs to the building and make recommendations for maximizing the utility of the building to the town going forward the next 80 years. The study will evaluate current space needs and evaluate the potential amount of office space in Town Hall, develop preliminary design plans, including elevations and floor plans. It will prepare site and building schematic drawings and prepare construction cost estimates. I hope you support this article.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The restoration of town funds across the Commonwealth is on the rise thanks to the use of CPA funds. Other communities throughout the Commonwealth have used CPA funds for renovation of town halls, including Needham, Ashland, Bedford, and Wenham. The Board of Selectmen and the Town Manager have had this project on our minds for a long time, and since the inception of the CPA. We believe hiring the appropriate consultant will save the town taxpayers money and provide an excellent restoration of this town hall. It's a unique perspective, and it's the town of Sudbury. We urge your support. Thank you.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 24? Could you stand, please?
Pat Brown, 34 West Spring Pine Road. The 2002 comprehensive space study basically says that Lower Town Hall is underutilized. And as far as I know, that's a premier large group meeting space. And one of its great strengths is not only is it large group meeting space in itself, but it has convenient, contiguous parking. And so I'm wondering if this proposal for renovating Town Hall takes into account that since 2002, anyway, I've seen a number of large and spirited movement meetings in that space, and that cutting it up for offices would mean we could no longer do that. Are we going to try and preserve Lower Town Hall, or are we still thinking of converting that into offices?
Do we have an answer to the question? We do. Mr. Kelly.
I think that's the purpose of the funding for this article. We'd like to look at all our opportunities. We have a beautiful building there. It's underutilized right now. It's a great town hall area, but perhaps it could be better proportioned. In the town of Ashland, they made a beautiful hall, but it's a little better proportioned, and just those are the opportunities that I think we want to look into going forward. I hope that answered the question.
Anyone else have any further comment on Article 24? Stand up, please.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. Presently, it's my understanding that the Historic Society is in the Upper Town Hall, and they're probably one of the spirited meetings that takes place in the Lower Town Hall. So I'm wondering if there's any provision in the scope for this design plan for accommodating their needs as well.
Do we have an answer? Mr. Kelly? Why don't you stay there, Mr. Kelly?
Again, we haven't done the design study yet. We need to get the funding to do that. But I would think that all of these issues will be heard, hopefully, over the next coming many months. The first group of people I went to prior to bringing this article forward was the Historical Society and talked to them about their plans. They have recently been looking at other opportunities and possibilities for their location. And sure, I mean, I truthfully, my own opinion had perhaps some portion of a renovated town hall could include a certain area where we'd have some tribute to the history of Sudbury included in the town hall. I just think that would be beautiful. But this study and these funds will be make it available to us to ask these questions to the right design professionals.
Any other questions? Could you please stand up?
Debbie Keeney, 71 Blueberry Hill Lane. To the last two people who spoke, it's almost like a plant. The Sudbury Historical Society definitely would like to use the Lower Town Hall for our program meetings. And so if you are planning to get rid of that space, I would certainly like to know that before we vote on it.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 24? I see no one. The motion is on the view graph. This is a majority vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We move on to Article 25, and we have a motion by Ms. Cavillac, the town planner.
Move to indefinitely postpone Article 25.
We receive a second. It does. Ms. Cavillac, you know our rule on indefinite postponement?
Right, very brief. As mentioned by Selectman O'Brien under Article 14 last night, and as also noted in page 18 of your warrant, this or a similar article will be brought forward at the appropriate time when the construction funds for the town center project are appropriated. Thank you.
Wonderful. And that did receive a second? Yes. All those, this is indefinite postponement. Anybody wish to be heard on that issue? Finance Committee have an opinion?
The Finance Committee recommends indefinite postponement.
Recommends indefinite postponement. Selectman?
Thank you, Ms. Moderator. Selectman recommend indefinite postponement.
Anybody wish to be heard on indefinite postponement? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It is a unanimous vote in favor. Article 26, Jim Hill.
I'm making the motion.
I guess Chris Morley will be making the motion.
I move in the words of the article, except that the sum of $67,000 shall be appropriated and funded from historic reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does.
And Jim Hill of the Historical Commission will be making a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Morley. Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road. I am the vice chairman of the Historical Commission in town. Which button? Okay, thank you. Now, we come before you tonight with three projects that the Historical Commission will be looking to be overseeing. The first is for a fire suppression system for the Hosmer House. The system that we're looking at is what's called a tank and pump fire suppression system, which basically allows you to put a large water tank in the basement of the house, which would then be used to service the fire suppression system in the case of a fire. The second project is to continue the survey of homes and buildings and locations in the town of Sudbury, what we refer to as the Old Home Survey. This is something that's required of the town's historical commission by the state historical commission. And then the third project is the restoration of the wooden component of the walls and gates at the town-owned town pound. The pound was first built in 1797 for the sum of $20. It's now in need of restoration of the timbers and the gates with an approximate cost of $6,000. Get to the pictures. This is the town pound. Most people recognize it. And then these are two completed CPA projects. One is Florence Hosmer's gravestone, which was installed thanks to the vote of town meeting last year, as well as the restoration and placement of the Hearst House, which is right actually behind the town pound, back in the original location. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectmen?
Selectmen recommend approval.
Okay. Do we have anyone who wishes to be heard on Article 26? Yes, could you stand up, please, all the way in the back? The Boy Scouts in the back. Yes, you. Boy Scouts, back.
My name is Harold Cutler, 163 Landham Road. I am a fire protection engineer as well as a call firefighter here in the town of Sudbury. I'm speaking in favor of the fire suppression system that's being proposed for the Hosmer House here. There is no more effective way to protect our historic buildings from the ravages of fire than to put in a fire suppression system. And based on what the speaker has described, I think he's talking about a water mist system.
Correct.
That is correct. A water mist system is one that minimizes the use of water and therefore minimizes the damage to the contents and the fabric of the building. And it's very appropriate for this situation. Sudbury was led the way back in 1975 when First Parish Church was sprinkled with a grant from the Historic Commission and therefore is well protected against fire. This would be an important step towards ensuring our historic town center remains as it is today.
Thank you. And please stand. Could we have a mic over here, please?
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. My question was about the choice of the fire suppression system, which the previous speaker just spoke to. Are there any other types of systems that have been considered that might not use water and be effective to better protect the artifacts in the building?
Yes, there has been. We met with the Permanent Building Commission. They don't believe, as well as Specialist Mr. Cutler, they don't believe that the powder type system would work in the Hosmer House because it's just not tight enough. New construction is tight enough. This is an older construction from 1700s, this is the best that we've been able to come up with to protect the building itself.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 26? Could you stand, please?
Katie Kang, 96 Old Garrison Road. I just have one question. Will there be emergency power for the system, or is it?
Possibly there will be at this point. The system itself hasn't been completely designed. We've gotten estimates on what it would be. I would assume that, yes, there would be a backup system for it.
Because the pump will be electric?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else on Article 26? I see no one. All those in favor, as shown the motion, signify raising your cards. Those opposed? It passes unanimously. We're now on Article 27. Mr. Morley for motion.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $100,000 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Jody Kablak, the town planner, actually the director of...
Can't you remember her name?
I think you know me by now. The popularity of the walkway construction program in Sudbury has not waned over the last few years. The planning board received 3 petitions for walkways in 2011, and the planning office routinely receives calls from residents about how to get their street on the list. It is clear that living in a neighborhood with a walkway is a quality of life issue for many residents. We're proud to have recently completed projects on Willis Road, Raymond Road, Knobscot Road, and the newest walkway on North Road. It's rare to drive down these streets on a clear day and not witness people walking, jogging, biking, recreating in their own front yards, easy, accessible, and convenient. However, we are not done. The 2000 Walkway Master Plan identified at least 13 additional miles of roadways that need walkways in Sudbury. And we currently are working on petitions from residents on Dudley Road, Old Framingham Road, Pantry Road, Peckham Road, Dutton Road, Powder Mill Road, Marlboro Road, and Powers Road. At the August 2011 public forum on walkways, the planning board prioritized Dudley Road and Old Framingham Road for the next walkways for construction. We have begun the planning for these walkways. However, considerations such as easements and wetlands impact on whether a walkway can actually be built on a street. No funds will be expended until the project planning is completed and the project is feasible. Residents who wish their streets to be considered should submit a petition to the Director of Public Works or the Planning and Community Development Department, and petitions are accepted at any time. None of the money under this article will be spent on maintaining existing walkways. It will all be for new construction. Walkway maintenance is funded annually in the DPW operating budget. And walkway constructing new walkway segments is an allowable category under the Community Preservation Act under the category of creation of recreational areas. I urge your support of this article.
Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Selectman, you unanimously support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on the walkways, Article 27? Please stand. Can we have a mic over here? Yep. Coming from the left.
Jennifer Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. I know this comes up many times every year, and the last time it came up, I spoke, and I'm going to speak again because my comment last time was, if you're going to build these sidewalks, please build them so that they don't fall apart and have to be maintained and rebuilt. I live off of Peckham Road. A sidewalk was built a couple of years ago. It's already falling apart because it was built poorly and cheaply. It's not designed to be run over by plows or any other trucks, and it happens, and it falls apart, and there's no point in building these kinds of sidewalks. So I just want to urge that if we're going to pass it, that maybe we ought to rethink the design parameters for the sidewalks. And last time I brought this up, everybody in the house went, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 27? What's that? Oh, yes.
I had a question. Ralph Tyler, Wendeacon Lane. With 13 miles to go and 100,000 a year, how many generations will it take before we're completed?
I assume you don't need an answer to the question.
No, I do. I'm actually wondering if it's going to be 50 years, 75 years, or 100 years, or perhaps more before we're done.
The $100,000 that we're asking for tonight will build approximately 1/2 mile of walkway. Sometimes we come in, we ask for $200,000, and that will take us almost to a full mile of walkway. So if 13 miles are left, we have about, 26 years.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 27? Could you stand up, please? Hang on. Can you just take the mic?
Alan Wallach, 67 Thompson Drive. Just a question for the Finance Committee. How much is allocated for maintenance of the existing walkways? There's $100,000 for new. How much is allocated this year for maintenance?
You're speaking just on walkways?
Just the walkways.
We have the Director of Public Works here, Bill Place. He may be able to answer this question.
This year we allocated $30,000 for maintenance of walkways. We plan on doing the Pecan Road walkway from Homestead to Hudson Road, and we're going to continue on Hudson Road. And from there on, it may be Landham Road, it may be Old Lancaster Road. We're not too sure yet, but about $30,000 a year.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 27? I see no one. All those in favor of Article 27, the motion, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It passes unanimously. Article 28.
Move in the words of the article, except that the sum of $106,000 shall be appropriated and funded from historic reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Rosemary Harvell, town clerk, will make the presentation.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here tonight to present Article 28, which will provide the final phase for preservation and restoration and digitizing our historic town records. And these are the ones that have been identified at risk of deterioration. And of course, by their nature, they're of historical and cultural importance to the town. As you hear me say every year, from the beginning, the town officials carefully recorded the activities and official acts of the town and of its residents and took great care to preserve these records that were created. And we have an unbroken chain of historic records dating back to 1638. And as record custodians, town clerks are mandated by state law to protect the records from fire, flood, vandalism, theft, and environmental damage. And I've come before you since 2008, I guess it is, and starting with a survey and then asking for money for preservation for the records. We've done that for 2 years, and also for upgrading of our town vaults, which are almost complete with the fire suppression, which is, I think, beginning tomorrow in the town hall. So we're well underway here, and this tonight is the final request for preservation of these records. And this is from the Community Preservation and would complete the funding for repair, stabilization, conservation, and also provide the archival storage boxes for the remaining records. Then they date from the 18th, 19th, and 20th century. And I've included here some photographs of some of the town records that as they went to undergo the treatment at Northeast Document Conservation Center. This one here, this is a picture of Sudbury documents, pages actually being washed. Okay, thank you. And then here, they took a picture for me of so that you can see the tears in the leaf along the folds and at the edges, so it needs restoration. Next. This is the conservator actually guarding the fold and mending tears with thin Japanese Kozo paper and wheat starch paste. Here we have a book that has been re-sewn with linen thread and linen tapes. And then they put paper down to line the book that has been re-sewn. So this is part of the binding process. And finally, here we have conserved volumes, and one of them is open, so you can see that these have been rebound. They've been mended and repaired with Japanese paper and then rebound in cloth. Finally, on here is a picture of some of the records being imaged, so capturing the digital images of the records themselves. Now, once we receive the digital images back, what we're doing with those is people will be able to reference them. And this is a picture of Sudbury Town Vital Records. This is page 8, and you can see here that you can read the births, and there's marriages in this book and deaths recorded. But the great thing about this is one of the books that currently using volunteers, and we have had volunteers from the League of Women Voters in Sudbury. They're actually transcribing the records for us. So when we have those transcriptions completed, and they're going to be referencing the actual page numbers in the ancient books themselves, people will be able to look for information with the transcriptions and then actually be able to go to the digital images of those pages and experience the book without causing any damage to the book itself. So I'm very excited about that project. And those will be available. In fact, these digital images are currently available at the library. And here's a little close-up of that same page. And then another page in the book. It looks a little blurry on that screen, but when you're on the computer screen, it's very clear. Okay. Next. Okay, now, of the documents that still are needing the repair and the preservation, 3 of them are very exciting that I wanted to share with you. They're all exciting, but these are particularly exciting to me. And they're from Ezekiel Howe, and he was a proprietor of Sudbury's Red Horse Tavern, which is the Wayside Inn. And he actually got that deed transferred to him from his father, David Howe. He was a Sudbury selectman, and he served in the 4th Middlesex Militia from 1776 to 1779, and he is designated as a Revolutionary War soldier. Do I still have time? Okay, so these are the 3 documents, and they have, all 3 of them have affixed wax seals. They're very similar in size, but the largest is 12 inches by 19. They're made with laid paper, and which is a process which leaves a watermark. When they dry the paper, they have it on metal grids, so it leaves a watermark. And it's iron gall ink, and there's various signatures that are interesting showing on those documents. And the first one here, this is his lieutenant's commission in 1760, and this is when King George II was in power, and he received his lieutenant's commission on the 29th of April, 1760. And here's a close-up of that one. So these aren't digital. Well, they are digital images, but these are just photographs. So, and this is his colonel's commission, and this happened when this is no longer under King George. This is when the Revolutionary War was beginning, and he was in the 4th Regiment of the Militia, the Middlesex. Next. And this picture shows you the condition that requires attention, and it will be, I don't know if you can see on here, there's all 3 of them have a wax seal, and in those days when they put the wax seal down, they put a piece of paper on top of it to show the impression of the seal. So that will remain on them. But they will be backed, and they would be preserved within Mylar, and then they would also have folders and have a box made just for them and digitized. And the last one here is the appointment for Justice of the Peace, and this is the one that has John Hancock's signature on it. He was the governor of Massachusetts at that time. So this was the 27th of March, 1781, and the next is a close-up of that signature. So that's a pretty exciting find, I think. Okay, next. Okay, so the Sudbury Department of Information Technology, which Mark Thompson is the director, and the town clerk's office and the Goodnow Library trustees were all working together with these digital images and transcriptions to make all of this available for research at the Goodnow Library. And selected documents and transcriptions will also be featured on the Sudbury Archives on the town website. So this is the final phase of the project. We'll restore and preserve and protect these unique historic town documents that are seriously threatened, and we're almost to the end with this. And scanning of the documents will provide the public access that we seek, and really to information that most of us may not even know lies within these records. It's crucial to preserve Sudbury's historic records for present and future generations, and if we let these records become lost, then they're forever gone. Thank you very much.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Will the Selectman unanimously support this article?
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 28? I see no one. All those in favor of article motions, raise your cards. Those opposed, it is a unanimous vote. We're on Article 29. Morley.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $200,000 appropriated. Mike Bonaconti, chair of the Mike Bonaconti, chair of the Sudbury Housing Trust, will make the presentation.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you, Ms. Monardi. My name is Mike Bonaconti. I'm the chairperson of the Sudbury Housing Trust. As background, the trust was created in 2006. There's a total of 9 trustees, including a board of selectmen, representative as required by the enabling legislation. The creation allowed for an entity primarily focused on home ownership opportunities compared to the Sudbury Housing Authority, which focuses in on rental opportunities. One purpose of the trust is to respond quickly to housing opportunities in a timely and nimble fashion. The goal of the trust is to concentrate on affordable housing, where all units are affordable. This aligns with the funding requirements of the CPA, as well as the trust's purpose. All units supported with CPA funds must be affordable to low or moderate income households. We also, at the Sudbury Housing Trust, help seniors maintain their homes, and I'll talk about that a little bit more later. Some of you might say, well, what does the trust actually do? Well, we provide avenues for first-time home buyers to live in the town of Sudbury. The Housing Trust makes an important contribution to the affordable housing that's in the town. And who are these folks? Well, they're families. They're financially stable. They have good credit, meet strict banking and underwriting guidelines to qualify for a mortgage. The town firefighter, social workers, retired couples, just to name a few. Single parents mostly make up this group, and the number of students in the school system per household for the affordable folks is 0.8 per household. The trust has made housing affordable in many ways. So some of the programs that we do have, for those that have been, you know, to town meeting before, they're probably familiar with some of those. The trust has created 8 units of affordable housing, 5 home preservation units, which you'll hear about more a little bit later, Habitat for Humanity duplex, which everyone may know is on Dutton Road. We've also bought down additional affordable units in the villages at the Old County Road. There are 5,900 units of housing in Sudbury. 8 units over 5 years is a pretty good start, but we'd like to do much more for affordable housing in the town of Sudbury. In addition, the trust has provided gap funding for projects. The Coolidge project, which essentially has 64 units of rental housing for seniors, 55-plus seniors. We've also, there'll be 6 units that we have contributed for gap funding for the Sudbury Housing Authority. Although these opportunities at the Coolidge and the Sudbury Housing Authority, they're not ownership, but they're rental. But I feel strongly about this because we also we're providing affordable living opportunities in further purpose of the housing trust. So this gap funding that I'm referring to essentially was given as basically a last resort to these projects. Otherwise, these projects would not move forward. All units, which I want to highlight, that the trust provides funds for, are all affordable, and the indeed restrictions are typically put on that are set in stone and are forever. Some of our past successes, as I mentioned before, are the 8 units of housing and also the Habitat for Humanity projects. That was very well received, and it's being used currently for a model for the Habitat for Humanity projects that are going forward in other parts of the state. The Maynard Road project. So the Maynard Road development, it's currently on hold. Construction bids came in higher than we expected, and essentially were the trust needs to meet and make decisions in terms of what we want to do in the future with this particular project. We reduced the size of the project from 6 units down to 3. We had many heated and discussions with the neighbors, which led from 6 to 3 units. There's an article that was written in the Town Crier in November of last year by a group of neighbors, and I'm going to read that right now. So we hear much rhetoric right here in our town, in our state, and nationally about how government does not work. But our 33 families, neighbors to the Sudbury Housing Trust, proposed affordable housing development at Maynard and Marble Road have a different story to tell about how local government really does work. The article goes on to say how the Housing Trust listened to the neighbors, and we took into consideration their views of how affordable housing in their particular neighborhood should be established, and we listened, came to a compromise, and ultimately I think it worked out well for both sides. One aspect are small grants. So this is actually a great program that I always love to do because I always think I feel like I'm helping someone out and putting them into a place where their lives are better. So the small grants program provides funding for health and safety repairs to eligible homeowners. The requirements include an income test, must be less than 100% of the area median income, a home assessment, which is less than the town median of all single-family homes, and the applicant must be the owner and living in the home as their principal residence. And the award is up to $3,000, so we don't grant more than $3,000 for any applicant. Most of these awards are to senior housings, as you folks can see here. So some sample repairs of the furnaces, boilers, ramps, handrails, leaks, rotted wood, and those are the type of things that we provide the $3,000 for. Perhaps the best way to explain this, too, is a testimonial. So James Evans, who's a relative of Kurt Garfield, who we all are probably familiar with, said, my stepfather, Kurt Garfield, loves the town of Sudbury. Having lived there most of his adult life, he's been a town historian almost as long. Having just retired from that job earlier this year, he's written books about both the town and the Wayside Inn. In recent years, he's encountered some hard times. His wife came down with MS. He came down with, unfortunately, Parkinson's disease. And his stepson further goes on to say, the confluence of these circumstances, as well as rising medical, oil bills, hard economic times for his family. As a family, they worked hard to continue to fulfill Kurt's wish to remain in his house, living in his Woodside home. And ultimately, his roof was leaking, and he was unable to get it repaired unless we help him out. So his stepson said, we realize times are tough generally. hard times and hard decisions need to be made in terms of where to allocate financial resources. We just wanted to let you know the decision to allocate some assistance here helps some of Sudbury's most loyal native sons in a time of his greatest need. We're more appreciative than I can articulate. The next slide shows home preservation. So I think a successful part of the trust has been home preservations where, you know, homes that are could be considered tear-down type of homes, we have preserved those and made them affordable. And again, the affordability aspect is, now until the end of time. So the trust plans to open an application period this fall and is glad to take names of anybody who'd like to be notified. The financial statement, so just remember the financials are, the financial package is on the Sudbury Housing website. You'll be able to see the Maynard Road asset as reported previously in the slide. And also, in addition to CPA funds, the Housing Trust through Beth Russ provides a lottery system. So other towns have affordable lottery systems. And the Housing Trust has took on supporting that and has pulled in revenue for that. And that revenue has been used for the small grant program that I mentioned. It pays for some of the payroll for some of the staff members. So it's been a very positive thing for us. So our Article 29 request, 10% of the CPA funds must be spent on housing. And it's been the tradition of Sudbury to appropriate these housing funds to the trust. So I ask that you vote yes for Article 29. In summary, the Housing Trust provides an avenue for first-time homebuyers. The Housing Trust is an important contribution to affordable housing. And remember the families that it does help, those who are on the fire department, teachers. Those are the folks that we see help.
You all set?
All set.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, folks.
Finance Committee, Bill Nealon.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Mr. Drabinski, Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen recommend approval.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 29? Yes, this gentleman here.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I support this, and I'd also like to encourage the Housing Trust. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I support this article, and I'd also like to encourage the Housing Trust whenever allocating funds for new construction projects that they consider sort of green housing construction approaches, Energy Star housing, the like, solar, geothermal. Not only would it help reduce the costs for the people that are living there, but it could also serve as a great model for the rest of the community. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? Could you stand up, sir? Can we get him a mic?
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. I kind of remember some lawyers that were kind of hostile in the hall last year on the Maynard Road project. Yeah, I'd like to know what we learned from that project. I didn't see any lessons that we learned up there.
I'm not clear about the first part, what lawyers were hostile.
Hang on a second. Do you have a specific question? That seems to be outside what this article is, whether or not we should appropriate from CPC funds $200,000 to Sudbury Housing Trust. Can we relate your question to that?
I guess I'd like to see, it seems to me that the way we've set up this trust, the money goes to the Housing Trust with pretty much unlimited discretionary authority. I'm just wondering if it isn't possible to have a little bit more in the approval process of how this $200,000 is spent, the object being to avoid another situation such as we had on the Maynard Road project.
Okay. Mr. Bonacani?
Sure. The trust meetings are monthly. They're open to the public, so we love people to come and voice their opinions and participate in the process that in our decision-making process. So we welcome you to be there.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? Yes, could you stand up, please?
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. It's my understanding that the definition of affordable for the Community Preservation Commission is that the people who live there have 100% of the area median income. The definition of affordable for 40B is that the people have 80% of the area median income. And therefore, when housing is described as affordable, I'm never quite sure which definition you're using. So, for example, for the units on Maynard Farm Road, are those 40B affordable or CPC affordable?
Mr. Monacani?
Beth Rust is going to answer this question.
That's okay.
Yes, Pat, you're right. The CPA allows funds to be spent up to 100% of the area median income, which is moderate income housing. The subsidized housing inventory, which counts towards our 10%, is 80% area median income. So there are those two definitions. The Maynard Road project was aimed at both of those segments. And it's still on hold, and those parameters may change as it goes forward, but that was the initial proposal.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? I see no one. This is a majority vote. All those in favor of the motion that appears on the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by well more than a majority. We're on Article 30. Mr. Morley?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is a three-pager. Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation.
Hang on a second. The fire chief has told me in the past that the folks sitting over there on the other side of the railing, it's a fire hazard. There's about 10 or 15 seats in the second row here. There's more behind that and more behind that. So I'm going to ask all the folks who are standing or don't have a seat to sit. Also, I can't count your vote if you're over there. Thank you. Right here in the second row, there's 10 seats. If you have a seat available next to you, please raise your hand. And while that's going on, and there's some seats right here in the front row. Mr. Morley, why don't you start reading your three pages?
All right. Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate the sum of $7,822,500 from the Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of purchasing development rights to 94 plus or minus acres of land known as Pantry Brook Farm and lying on both sides of Concord Road at 652 and 667 Concord Road, shown as parcels 0200 and 0201 on Assessor's Map E10, and for all expenses connected therewith, including bond and note issuance expense. And to raise this appropriation, the Treasurer, with the approval of the Board of Selectmen, is authorized to borrow $7,822,500 under Mass General Laws, Chapter 44B, Section 11, and Mass General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 7, Subsection 3, or any other enabling authority, and that the Board of Selectmen, Town Manager, and Conservation Commission are authorized to take any other action necessary to carry out this project, including execution of a permanent conservation restriction or other similar form of permanent restriction pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 184, Section 32, for permanent conservation, agriculture, and public passive recreation under the control of the Conservation Commission and Sudbury Valley Trustees, and submittal of grant applications under the Self-Help Act, Mass General Law, Chapter 132A, Section 11, or any other applications for funds in any way connected with the scope of this project, and to enter into and execute any and all agreements, contracts, and instruments as may be necessary on behalf of the Town of Sudbury to effect such project. All appropriations shall be allocated to the category of open space. Jody Kablack, Director of Planning and Community Development, will make the presentation.
Good night. Not yet. Good evening. Oh, boy. Hold on. My presentation is 10 minutes, okay? But I think that this parcel deserves it. Tonight, I am pleased to present Sudbury's crown jewel, our premier open space property, one that has been on the town's open space plan for over 30 years,
and a very familiar landscape on Concord Road, Pantry Brook Farm. Okay. This approximately 100-acre parcel, outlined in red on the map, is located on both sides of Concord Road, roughly 50 acres on each side. The farm is owned by Carol and Dick Wolfe, lifelong residents of Sudbury, whose long-term goal of preserving this important heritage landscape brings us here tonight. But this article is not just about preserving land. This is about Sudbury's history and the opportunity for current and future residents to preserve the last, most intact historical farm site symbolizing Sudbury's agrarian heritage. The farmstead was built by Aaron Hunt, who represented Sudbury 200 years ago in the War of 1812. His father, William Hunt, whose family dated back to the 1600s in the area, gave acreage from his 400-acre farm to his two sons, Aaron and Israel, who built abutting farms. And is there a pointer, Mark? Is that the middle?
Yes.
Okay. In this area. Abutting farms, with Israel's farmstead most recently being known as Barton Farm on Marlborough Road. Aaron married Lois Hosmer of the extended Hosmer family, from whom Florence Hosmer descended. Aaron and Lois's daughter, Loretta, married Lucius Bent, whose ancestors were original settlers of Sudbury in 1638, and whose children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren would continue farming this land. Both the Hunt and Bent families represented Sudbury in the Revolutionary War and served the town in various other capacities throughout the years. Lucius was town meeting moderator several times and was founder of the Sudbury Grange. Aaron was the great-great-grandfather of the current steward of Pantry Brook Farm, who has lived on the property herself nearly 70 years. I'm hoping that many of you availed yourselves of the opportunity to visit this property over the last two weekends on the site walks that we held. While many of people are familiar with the views of the farm from Concord Road, the internal views transport guests to an earlier time and place where you're in the midst of historic buildings, rolling fields, and stone walls. It is this sense of place that the Wolfes have as their long-term vision to preserve landscapes such as Pantry Brook Farm, which are disappearing all over the country, for future generations, and the first step is this partnership with the Town of Sudbury and the Sudbury Valley Trustees. The town has been offered the opportunity to preserve this property, not by purchasing the property outright, but by purchasing both the owner's right to develop the property through the grant of a conservation restriction, which will contain detailed restrictions on how the owners may use the property in the future, as well as clearly defined public access to the property. All of these rights will be deeded perpetual rights. The property will remain substantially as it is forever, even if it is sold to a different owner. This is the same method by which the town has preserved the 35-acre Fairbank Farm on Old Sudbury Road, the 303 acres of the Boy Scout and Obscout Reservation, and the 70 acres that were preserved on part of the Cutting Farm on Maynard Road. A conservation restriction will be placed on the property detailing its allowable and prohibited uses. The Wolfes have other plans as well, impressive plans, which involve restoring the original farmhouse containing several authentic examples of 19th century materials and construction techniques. They've begun investigating restoration of the farmhouse with the organization Historic New England. Historic New England is the oldest, largest, and most comprehensive regional heritage organization in the nation. They own and operate 36 historic sites in five New England states, including the Lyman Estate in Waltham and the Codman House in Lincoln. They hold restrictions on properties and buildings, restore historic structures, own collections of historic objects and artifacts, conduct public programs, and publish articles documenting more than 400 years of life in New England. Following the farm's restoration, the Wolfes plan to put permanent restrictions on the interior and exterior of the farm buildings and place them in New England, in Historic New England's stewardship program. Thus, the unique and historical architectural features of the buildings will be preserved along with the surrounding property at no further cost to the town. Restoring and preserving the essence of this farm is a personal goal of Carol Wolfe, who grew up on the property and has a deep personal connection to it, as the land has been farmed by her ancestors for six generations. Our project tonight will not guarantee fruition of these restoration plans, but the payment made for the conservation restriction does make these ambitious plans financially feasible. Planning for preservation of this farm goes back decades. It has continuously been at the forefront of all the priority lists on studies of the town's open space needs. The farm has been identified on the town's open space and recreation plan since the 1970s. In 2002, it was ranked as the highest priority parcel on the Land Use Priorities Committee report, tied with the Wayside Inn. That report set forth specific criteria and a process for evaluating parcels so that each parcel could be ranked objectively. The criteria were then applied to each parcel on the 2009 Open Space and Recreation Plan, and of course, Pantry Brook Farm was ranked highest again, tied with the Wayside Inn. In 2008, the farm was listed as a priority heritage landscape, meaning it was identified by the public, Sudbury residents, as an important landscape which is integral to Sudbury's history. The farm is one of the few remaining parcels of land in Sudbury in active agriculture and has federally identified prime agricultural soils, which, if this article passes, will remain so in perpetuity for the benefit of future generations of Sudbury residents. The farm abuts approximately 2,000 acres of protected open space on the west, north, and east sides, including preserved farmland at Barton Farm on Marlborough Road and fields owned by Verrill Farms on Concord Road. The eastern portion of the property abuts state fish and game land and extends to the Great Meadows National Wildlife Refuge. Not a great picture, but hopefully you can see that. Without a willing landowner, this property could easily fall prey to development. There is sufficient upland area, adequate soils, and significant frontage along Concord Road to create a subdivision of at least 34 lots. This plan has been prepared, demonstrating the development potential, and the value of the property was devised from this plan. What is being offered to the town is the placement of a permanent conservation restriction governed by Mass General Laws, Chapter 184, Sections 31 through 33, on approximately 94 acres of land for a price of $7.91 million. This is not the full value of the land. The property still retains approximately $2 million in value based on two building envelopes around two existing single-family homes on the property. And I'll show you them here, right here and right here. Since the restriction will prohibit any further subdivision and development, its future value is decreased. This expenditure will not increase your taxes or your CPA surcharge. Funds currently allocated to the CPA fund and in reserve for expenditures such as this will be used for the payment. The CPC has elected to pay for this project by bonding the town's share of the purchase price plus bond issuance costs in order to take advantage of current low interest rates. Bonding will be in place for 20 years, spreading the payment of the project over multiple years and multiple taxpayers, since the benefit to Sudbury residents will remain in perpetuity, and this is a stated bonding policy of the Community Preservation Committee. In conjunction with these new bonds, the CPC is also recommending the retirement of old debt on CPA land purchases in Article 33, and will utilize $4.35 million of those reserves, as Chris Morley mentioned earlier. The conservation restriction will guarantee that the land remains undeveloped and essentially as it appears today in perpetuity. The Wolfs will retain ownership of the land and can sell the property in the future. However, all subsequent owners will also be obligated under the provisions of the conservation restriction. These provisions will include keeping at the owner's expense the fields as open fields and the forest as forest. The stone walls will be preserved on the property. No further subdivision of the property or the reserved building envelopes will be allowed, and only non-habitable agricultural buildings will be permitted to be constructed on the restricted land. A facade restriction will also require the preservation of the exterior features of the historic farmhouse and barn structures, pending a perpetuity restriction as contemplated by the Wolfs in their work with Historic New England. The only development that will be permitted will be one residential dwelling on each of the excluded building envelopes, with no other residential development permitted. Agriculture will go on, as well as the continued tree-cutting business operated by a family member for his life tenancy on the east side of the property. And once his tenancy is up, that operation will leave as well. Public access onto the property will be allowed, but will be somewhat restricted. Existing trails located on the eastern side of the property, which are part of the trail system on the LS property, will remain and be open to the public in their current location or as relocated or expanded. And this slide shows the current trail system. And this in red, again, is the part of the Pantry Brook Farm. Some trails are on the property now, and this is all upland. There's a portion of upland woodland in here where the trails could be expanded or relocated onto. The western side of the property where the wolves live, the western side of the property where the wolves live will be open to the public for guided walks given by SVT or the Sudbury Conservation Commission at scheduled times throughout the year, or more often with the consent of the property owner. This is the minimum amount of public access that will be available. The town and SVT will jointly hold the conservation restriction. SVT will be responsible for monitoring and enforcing the provisions of the restriction, eliminating future costs to the town for this work. We're pleased to work with SVT and partner with them on this project. They have provided invaluable expertise in land protection. They will work to protect the land and enforce the provisions of the CR in the future, and they are currently fundraising to provide an infusion of private funds to the property, thereby reducing the town's cost. Another partner in this project is the Sudbury Foundation. Their commitment of $175,000 towards this project highlights their mission to preserve the town's natural and historic assets. In addition, the town will be applying to the state's land grant program through the Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs for up to $400,000, which will further reduce the town's costs. Sudbury has been successful in obtaining these grants in the past, and we have received similar grants for the Piper Land and the Knobscot Reservation. The Board of Selectmen, Planning Board, Conservation Commission, Community Preservation Commission, and the Finance Committee support this article. Debbie Dineen will highlight some of the ecological aspects of the property which make it a unique and important parcel for preservation. But before I close, I want to thank the Wolves for being such fine stewards of this property and for their willingness to share this beautiful farm, their home, with the town. Thank you.
Bill Nealon from the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski for the Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. We have a unique opportunity here to protect what is really the quintessential property in the town of Sudbury. And I hope everyone really thinks what we're doing here tonight. This is really an opportunity, once in a lifetime, to preserve something that we all drive by. And when I first moved to town, this is what, to me, Sudbury was. And 30 years later, it's still there. And I agree with what Jody said about the wolves. Thank you for protecting this property. We urge you to support this. The Board of Selectmen is unanimous behind this. Please support it. Thank you.
I've asked Debbie Dineen of the Conservation Commission to speak, since they are one of the stewards of this land, should this pass.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, and good evening, everyone. I will be brief. I'm going to let the property speak for itself for the most part. Thank you. Jody just explained both the physical and the fiscal conditions of the protection of by far this most important remaining parcel of land in Sudbury. You may remember the numerous times that I've stood up here extolling the virtues of various parcels of land. With most of the parcels, we had other parcels coming along. There were a lot to choose from. That's not so anymore. You saw the list that Jody put up a while ago. There is no parcel on that list that is anywhere near the size and the importance of the parcel that's before you tonight. There will not be many more, if any, town meetings where the fate of such a large parcel of land is in your hands. From the tiniest spring flower to the vast unfolding of rolling field after field rising above Concord Road,
to the miles of stone walls that have been silent witness to Sudbury's evolution, to the stately trees standing guard over the original homestead, this property is much more than the sum of its parts. The eastern side of the property, as Jody describes, has trails connecting to a vast network of trails, protected trails, on the Lincoln Sudbury School property, as well as on the State Division of Conservation and Recreation land. The Pantry Brook Farm has been on the open space plan since there was an open space plan, beginning in 1970. Ironically, in 1970, the most important feature to preserve was the wetlands associated with Pantry Brook, Sawmill Brook, and some of the other tributaries that are on the property. There was no formal wetlands protection at the time. Why protect farmland? There's no need. We have plenty of it, right? In 1970, we did. Yes, as our needs changed over the decades, this land has remained as the highest priority for preservation on the open space plan for the past 42 years. As our priorities changed, Pantry Brook Farm was still there to address our needs. It has the wetlands. It has Pantry Brook and Sawmill Brook. It has farmland, prime state-designated agricultural farmland. It has wildlife habitat. It's one of the two places in Sudbury where there have been sightings of bobcats. There's habitat connectivity. Bobcats need lots of room. It has diverse habitats. It has field, it has forest, it has wetlands. That matrix provides genetic diversity, species diversity, and ecological diversity. There aren't many properties where we have all of that in one package. It also has the incredible vistas that hopefully you're enjoying and are hopefully scrolling behind me. No. No? Okay, can you just kind of keep flipping through? Okay. Well, you'll enjoy them quickly here. Most importantly, it has a very intrinsic value. It has habitat for our soul. It is part of what we need as well as what the animals need. Yes, we've waited 42 years for this vote tonight. That's 42 years since we first recognized the importance of this property. Pantry Brook Farm has been a constant in our landscape throughout that time. Okay, the trees are larger. The cars and the tractors are newer, maybe. But the farm brings us back to a much simpler time. The copse of trees in the east field has become such an iconic scene, you might have thought they were planned. Mr. Wolf informs me that they were actually trees left over after the trees were planted around the house in the 1930s. That's where they decided to put the extras. Preserving this piece of land says something about us, individually and as a community. It speaks to our values. It speaks to our sense of who we are and where we came from, whether we came from city or country. It acknowledges our respect for the past and concern for the future. Its fate is in your hands tonight. Please vote in favor of Article 30. Thank you.
We'll now have a discussion on Article 30. Anybody wish to be heard? Yes, could you stand up, please? There's a mic. If you walk fast, yes.
I'm Susan Crane, speaking tonight on behalf of Sudbury Valley Trustees. And after 17 years as a resident in Sudbury, I am no longer a resident, so may I have permission from the hall to speak?
Yes. Are you speaking on behalf of SVT?
On behalf of SVT.
Sudbury Valley Trustees. All those who wish to give permission to Ms. Crane to speak signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by more than a majority. Ms. Crane.
Thank you all, and it's nice to see many of you again. During my many years in Sudbury and my work as a volunteer for the town long ago on the Land Use Priorities Committee and also for my work at SVT, which has been since the late 1990s, Pantry Brook Farm has always been a very, very high priority for conservation, and I'm delighted that we're finally here talking about its protection. You've heard quite a bit from Debbie and from Jody eloquently about the values of this property, so I will be brief, and I don't think I need to repeat them, and I hope there'll be a pretty picture behind me of the property, if you could put one up. Thank you. I guess there are some unique features of the property. So I am here to tell you a little bit about the conservation restriction that, if this passes tonight, Sudbury Valley Trustees will be co-holding with the town of Sudbury. And we at Sudbury Valley Trustees are really thrilled to be a partner on this with both the town and with Carolyn Dick Wolf, to whom we're very grateful that they have made this happen. A conservation restriction is a detailed legal document that is very much like a deed restriction, and it has three primary parts. The first describes the purposes of the conservation restriction, which in this case will be ecological, historical, scenic, agricultural. The second part is the allowed uses on the property, and here at Pantry Brook Farm, there will be farming, recreational trails, conservation areas that have all been described by Jody and Debbie. And then the third part is where SVT comes in, or hopefully never has to come in, and that is to enforce the prohibited uses of the property, which here will be any form of development or subdivision, removal of the stone walls that crisscross the property, or the destruction of historical buildings. So by co-holding the conservation restriction, Sudbury Valley Trustees will be assuming certain legal responsibilities forever, and truly forever. This property will never be developed. And our responsibilities on an annual basis are to have our stewardship staff, and we have a couple of dedicated stewardship staff members at Sudbury Valley Trustees. They will go out to the property annually to meet with the landowner, to visit it and monitor the property, and to make sure that everything on the property complies with the terms of the conservation restrictions. And in the event that violations are ever found, which could be violations by future landowners, and that could be decades and decades from now, then SVT must enforce the terms of the conservation restriction to make sure that its conservation purposes continue to be upheld. Jody mentioned that preserving property with the conservation restriction is not a new concept to Sudbury. You've done this many times and many times in recent years using CPA funds to do it. And Fairbank Farm was protected last year, the Nod Scott Boy Scout Reservation in 2008, and Cutting Farm on Maynard Road, and Sudbury Valley Trustees was pleased to be a part of many of these projects. And we found that this is a very cost-effective way to preserve property forever. One of the reasons Sudbury is such a great town is because of the efforts of conservation-minded landowners such as Carolyn Dick Wolf and the very high value this town has placed on conservation year after year at this town meeting. Driving down Concord Road tonight on my way to town meeting, I couldn't even begin to imagine what Concord Road would be like without Pantry Brook Farm as far as the eye could see on both sides of the road. This farm is truly a treasure that will be part of Sudbury forever with your vote yes on this article. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 30? Yes, sir. Stand, please.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. There's two things that concern me about this article. One is that this is an extremely open-ended mandate that we're giving to the people that are negotiating and buying this land. The terms, the exact terms of the deed restrictions and so on are sort of left to the imagination. I understand that there are some parameters that are supposedly the minimum amount that of access that'll be held and so on. But I guess I would have expected that in something, a purchase this large, that there would be a negotiation, a price settled on and terms of the deed restrictions, and then that they would come back to the town meeting and say, this is what we've negotiated. Will you approve it or disapprove it? So this concerns me a bit, and I'd like to know if anybody else feels that way, get some discussion on that. The second thing that concerns me is that I noticed from the map on page 21 that the proposed rail trail goes through this property. And nothing has been said that I've heard about what the possible impact on whatever open space usage this land gets of that particular circumstance if the rail trail is ever built. Now, maybe it won't be, but certainly there's a lot of momentum behind it. And there certainly seems to be, if the map is accurate, a good part of the rail trail going through there. So does anybody have any further information on that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Coe. So the question is, has the price been negotiated? Is it the number that's on the view graph?
Yes, the price has been negotiated and agreed on. It is $7.91 million, of which $7.7 million is the town's share. The motion is for $7.8225 to be bonded, and that includes $7.76 million in principal and $62,500 in anticipated bonding and note issuance costs. So the price has been set. And so have most of the provisions of the conservation restriction. While we don't have the conservation restriction fully negotiated at this point, the selectmen have entered into a letter of intent with the property owners and with SVT, which does outline the provisions that we expect to be in the CR. As Susan Crane pointed out, both the purpose of the CR, the allowable uses, and the prohibited uses. And this document was just executed on May 2nd, 2012, so it is new. We've been working on this deal feverishly in anticipation of this town meeting. I hope that answers the first part of the question. The second part is regarding the rail trail. The rail trail does abut this property along the western side of it. This property, this project and the rail trail project are two separate independent projects, which will both advance on their own merits. They are not married in any way, shape, or form. Pantry Brook Farm does not own the rail trail. It is owned by the state. And when that project is ready for advancement, and if it does advance, that will be taken up on its own. This project is ready for town meeting vote, and we hope to see that pass this evening. Thank you.
As to the question on the Chapter 184 restriction, it's my understanding, and we're going to get town council to tell us if that's accurate, that A, it's perpetual, and B, the most of the conditions in it are fairly standard because the state won't agree to it. The state has to sign off, the town has to sign off, and the owners have to sign off. Maybe town council can tell us if that's accurate or not.
Mr. Moderator, you have accurately described the requirements of Chapter 184.
Anybody else? Hang on, let's hear from a few more people first. Yes, way back there. Can we get a mic up there?
My name is Chris Kurth, 4 Puffer Lane, Sudbury. I grew up on Haines Road, 113 Haines Road, where I operate Sienna Farms on my parents'. Farmland, and we also cultivate fields right across the railroad tracks from Pantry Brook Farm on the Barton farmland that's preserved through the state APR restriction. I just want to say a few words about the agricultural potential of this farmland and the current agricultural use. I would bet a fair bit of money that everyone in this room has eaten food off of Pantry Brook Farm. If you've ever purchased corn at Barrel Farm, because a lot of corn over the years has been grown on the lowland field of Pantry Brook Farm. The upland fields are more appropriate for perennial agriculture because of the hillside nature of the fields. anything that Barrel Farm can do to continue growing food on this farmland, I'm sure they will. Any way that Sienna Farms can help the Wolfs sustain their upland fields over the generations, even if it's just helping them mow the fields as they grow into their senior years. So the property is flanked by good farmers on both sides. Other than that, I just want to thank like a lot of other people have tonight, thank the Wolfs for bringing this opportunity to the town of Sudbury for the next 10,000 years. I don't know if I've ever made a decision that lasts till the next ice age, until those fields are washed to the Sudbury River, but this is a very exciting moment.
Thank you. Could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic down here?
Alan Wallach, 67 Thompson Drive. Now, the last part's very important. 67 Thompson Drive abuts a property. And I've been very fortunate. I tried to buy a piece of that property 30 years ago to prevent builders from surrounding me. I have about two-thirds of the cul-de-sac right in that little chart over there. It's the most beautiful property I've ever seen. I walk it on the tracks. I walk the sides. There's wildlife. It's just gorgeous. I think maybe me, her mom or somebody wouldn't sell it to me because they said they really want to preserve it. This is 30 years ago. I've been in Sudbury since 1973. So, wouldn't sell it. They wanted to preserve it. They believed in it. And I think Carol, when I look at that property, I'll tell you another piece of it. If I have a lot of builder friends, and they would die to buy that property. Whether you're building 34 units or 40B housing or whatever you want to do, that property is ideal across the board. And Carol, I think, has taken a hell of a lot less money than she can get on the open market for that product because she believes in Sudbury. She believes in her farm, and she's been a resident for God knows when. So, three cheers for Carol.
Anybody else wish to add something new to the discussion on Article 30? Anyone else who hasn't spoken before? Okay, very briefly, please.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I just wanted, in case anybody's having doubts on the conservation restriction and what that means, the fact that this is going to be a conservation restriction subject to Mass General Laws Chapter 181, Section 32, basically is the long legal way of saying the state has to sign off on it, and the state's sign off on the conservation restriction means that the state has to see that there is an overwhelming public benefit to the restriction. So the restriction will be discussed and voted on and signed by the Conservation Commission in public meetings. It will be discussed and signed and voted on by the selectmen in public meetings. And then when that's all done, the state has to be sure that that restriction has an unparalleled public benefit. So it's not as though we can just come up with some wording and there's a restriction. For this restriction to be in perpetuity, the public benefit portion of that is crucial. Thank you.
And that's Chapter 184 as opposed to Chapter 181. Okay. Doesn't appear that anyone else has anything to say, so we're going to move to a vote. Keep in mind this is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion as appeared in the view graph, please signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It is a unanimous vote. We're on to... Hang on. We have a little bit more business to finish up. Looks like we may be able to finish up in the evening. We're on to Article 31. Mr. Morley, CPC.
Move to appropriate the sum of $300,000 from the Community Preservation Act funds, as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee, for the purpose of purchasing in fee simple the property located at 15 Hudson Road, containing approximately 1 acre of land, shown as parcel 003 on Assessor's Map H09, and demolition of the structure thereon, subject to all rights and easements, to be used for historic and recreation. Jody Kablak will make the presentation. Oh, that's why it seemed to be truncated. I'm sorry.
Are you finished with the motion?
No. Okay. Subject to all rights and easements to be used for historic, recreation, or open space purposes allowable under the Community Preservation Act, said appropriation to be allocated to historic and recreation categories and funded from unrestricted reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Cadillac?
Thank you. Article 31 seeks CPA funds to purchase a small parcel of land located at 15 Hudson Road. Thank you. Which is outlined in red on the view graph. The lot contains 0.998 acres, on which stands a circa 1938 single-family residence. The property is flanked by Grinnell Park to the east and the Village Green Commercial Center to the west, and is an integral component to the Town Center Historic District, which has also been designated a National Register Historic District since 1976. If purchased using CPA funds, the town could use this property for either historic, recreation, or open space purposes. The location of the parcel makes it ideal for any of these municipal uses, including the ability to increase the size and usability of Grinnell Park, or as a possible site for a town museum, as desired by historical groups in town. Additionally, the rear of the property has been identified as suitable for stormwater enhancements as part of the Sudbury Center intersection project and is integral to any improvement of the intersection, as drainage solutions are desperately needed in the center. Several town committees have had their eye on this parcel of land for several years as the house has deteriorated in condition. The owners of the property, longtime residents who have come to understand the town's needs, have worked with us to accomplish the sale prior to the parcel being offered on the open market. The price of the lot is $275,000, which was determined by completing a property appraisal. An additional $25,000 is requested for demolition and restoration costs, bringing the total project cost to $300,000. The Sudbury Town Center has also been designated as a priority heritage landscape in the 2006 Heritage Landscape Report. If the lot is not purchased by the town, the house will be torn down and redeveloped. Purchasing the property will allow the town to control development so that any development will be in keeping with the character of the historic district. Increasing the town's land holdings in the town center will also help to preserve and enhance the historic character of Sudbury, as well as create better opportunities for public awareness and usage of the town center. The Sudbury Historical Commission, the Board of Selectmen, the Conservation Commission, the Finance Committee, and the Planning Board support this proposal, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Finance Committee, Bill Nealand.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski, Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen support this article.
Great. And I had a question. It doesn't say in a motion that this is subject to Chapter 184, that perpetual restriction that the last article that we passed has in it. So I'm asking Council that if it doesn't have that language in it, because this is a CPC purchase, if this goes through, will it automatically be subject to Chapter 184?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, the Community Preservation Act so requires.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic to this gentleman?
Thank you. Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road. Could you explain the 184 that you're...
Same 184 we were talking about in the last article. What it is a perpetual restriction that means this land cannot be built upon.
I don't think that's accurate.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
How could you put a museum on it if you can't build on it?
No, build a house on people to live there and do other than conservation, open space, historic, all those
Thank
things
you.
That are in the statute. Okay? Thank you for correcting that. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes. Okay. We'll be with you in a moment. In the meantime, does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Thank you. Could we get a mic down there? Great.
Steve Lansendorf, 43 Hawes Road. Maybe a procedural question, but I'm curious why the Finance Committee takes a position on this article.
It involves money.
It involves CPC.
It's still
funds.
Town money. The bylaw requires the Finance Committee to report on all moneyed articles. Anybody else wish to be heard? Could you stand up, please?
Laura Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. Jody just said $275,000 to purchase the property and $25,000 to demolish it. This is in the historical district. Can we just tear it down? And if we do, where's the money to rebuild?
Can you answer that question? Did you hear it?
I think so. I'm not sure. The $25,000 that's included in the article is to tear the property, tear the building down, abate the asbestos in the furnace in the basement, and then temporarily to restore the property so that it, you know, will look nice. And there's a lot of overgrown vegetation. There are a lot of dead trees on the property. It drops in grade where their parking was, so it's really just to grade the property, loam and seed it so that it is presentable.
The other question was, you're going to be demolishing a historic building?
We will go through a demolition permit. I frankly doubt that the Historical Commission will deem that a historic resource.
And
but
lastly,
we will go through that, yes.
Do you need any money with which to build something else there, or that's not your intention?
That's not the intention right now. If at some future date, town meeting or the Historical Commission or the Historical Society wishes to put a project forward for a town history museum, that is a use that we may contemplate on that site.
Going on to the next issue, do you want
to talk to us
about anything?
I believe if we could, we would like to amend the motion to, at the very end of this motion, it said, and funded from unrestricted reserves, and we would like to amend that motion to say, and funded from FY13 revenue.
So is this correct, what we're seeing on the scene, as to what you want on the screen?
Yes.
Okay. The person who made the second, is that okay with you? And you were who made the motion? Mr. Morley, is that okay with you? Okay, that's fine. Anybody have any questions about why the change was made? No? Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Just clarification.
Mike.
I'm just a little concerned about this demolition. When in your report you say the property, once part of the first settlement of Sudbury, makes it worth purchasing to ensure that the essential character of the town is preserved. And in the same mouthful, we say we're tearing it down. I'm just confused. Well, which is it?
Well, the property is an essential part of the town center. I don't think I'm saying, or that the report is saying, which was a CPC report, is saying that the house is an essential part of the town center character.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? I see no one. Yes, could you stand, please? Wait for Mike. Can we get one down there?
Tom Powers, Union Ave. I did a little research on this project and went to the State Registry of Deeds sites, the County Registry of Deeds, and at one point this property was subject to taking for non-payment of taxes. Was that ever resolved?
Ms. Cadillac?
I believe that there is a tax lien on the property, and the selectmen have voted to forego the taxes. It's approximately $13,000 on the property.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Okay. All those in favor of the motion as shown in the view graph as we change it, signify raising your cards. All those opposed. It required a two-thirds vote. It received much more than two-thirds. We're now on to Article 32 and near the end of the warrant. Mr. Morley.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does.
KP Kang will make the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Morley and Mr. Moderator. Okay, I'm going to be very quick. I am the current chair of the Sudbury Housing Authority Board of Commissioners, and we're here before you to make a modification to some money that was granted to us back in 2006. There was $360,000 that was granted to us for to assist us in purchasing condos in four condos in the number four, that is, condos in 40B developments that were coming up. The idea was that with that money, as well as some state funding, as well as our own money in terms of in the form of a mortgage, we would be able to buy one of the affordable units and then lease it out, rent it out to our tenants. After many years, first it was the economy, and that delayed any condos being available for us to look at. And then once one of the 40Bs was in construction, we looked at one of the affordable units and started negotiating. And we ran into a problem where the condo documents have the condo associations typically want to have control over the people that the terms of leases. If you own a condo, you can lease it to somebody, but they want to have some control over how that lease agreement is made. And unfortunately, as a public housing authority, we have to abide by certain state regulations as far as tenant rights. So it seems that we can't come to an agreement as far as condo documents and our mandated tenant rights. So because of that, we're thinking of we want to be able to have the ability to use the money, the $360,000, towards maybe buying a smaller house that might be available, renovating it and converting it into a market rate house and converting it into low income housing. So that's what this article is about. Any questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
Ms. King, would you be kind enough to say move in the words of the article?
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I thought Mr. Morley did that. Yeah.
Oh, it's been done.
That's what I thought.
Twice. So you all set, Ms. King?
Yes.
Great. Why don't you stay right there?
Okay.
Anybody, Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
And the Selectmen?
We recommend approval also.
Also recommend approval. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 32? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion, signify raising your cards. Those opposed? It passes unanimously. And Mr. Morley tells me he now is going to speak on Article 33 for a brief period of time, and then we'll immediately go to 34 and 35, which is going to be for a total of 10 minutes.
All set?
Yes.
Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation budget for FY13 Community Preservation surtaxes. $82,750 administrative and operating costs, $1,171,498 in debt service, and to transfer the sum of $4,350,000 from unrestricted reserves to debt service, and further to reserve the following funds, $47,752 for budgeted unrestricted CPC uses.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley?
Yep, thank you. Each year, this last article is the place where we do what the town financial staff needs us to do in order to allocate the monies to their rightful accounts. This year, as I mentioned when I spoke earlier, there is one particular item which is unusual for us in this article, and in general, a significant enough change in our cash position that I wanted to call it to your attention again. This is our simple budget for the coming year. The impact of the Pantry Brook Farm rights purchase comes in fiscal year 14 and in the motion for this article. As you can see, FY13's expenditures are roughly the same as the anticipated FY13 revenue, even with the cash purchase of 15 Hudson Road. And this slide indicates the effect of devoting a very large share of our cash reserves to the two land deals which have been approved tonight. Back to the motion. Again, in the motion itself is where the $4,350,000 moves from unrestricted reserves, or savings, to debt service, to pay off the older debt through bond defeasement. And as I mentioned earlier, that will save us approximately $250,000 by going to a lower bond rate. I'd like to thank the hall again for your support for Sudbury CPA and thank all of the volunteers on my committee and on other committees that we work with, as well as the dedicated town staff whose efforts we rely upon so much. Thank you, and hopefully good night.
Joan Carlton for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski for the Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. We recommend approval.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 33, the budget for the CPC? I see no hands. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It passes unanimously. So we're now a quick announcements, and then we'll move on to 34 and 35. Would any town official who was just elected a month ago now, but to take effect after this town meeting, but who has not been sworn in by the town clerk yet, or the assistant town clerk, please come forward to see one of them to my right to get sworn in as soon as we dissolve this town meeting. Before taking up the last two articles, I'd like to thank all the folks, employees, and volunteers who have helped with town meeting. But what I'd like to do particularly is thank all of you for coming out to take care of your jobs as legislators. Thank you. Article, we now move on to the two non-binding resolutions at the end of the warrant. Articles 34 and 35 will be presented together. They will be for a total of 5-minute presentation by Dick Williamson of the Rail Trail Committee and a 5-minute presentation by Pat Brown of the Rail Trail Committee. He is speaking in favor of the two articles. She will be speaking against the two articles, the two resolutions. The Finance Committee has no position on 34 or 35. The Selectmen, as I understand it, have no position because these are non-binding resolutions, but they are advisory to the Selectmen, who are not so presumptuous as to know how town meeting will be voting on these two resolutions. As we have done in the last 5 years, there will be no motion, no amendment, no debate, no head count. Although the presentation will be combined, the votes will be separate on each resolution. I will estimate whether the resolution passes, fails, or is too close to call. Under no circumstances will there be a head count. That's how we've been doing it for the last 5 years at least. Mr. Williamson, please come forward for your 5 minutes.
I'm Dick Williamson of 21 Pendleton Road. I'm speaking on behalf of the majority of the members of the town's Rail Trail Conversion Advisory Committee. And I'm also speaking on behalf of the over 2,000 Sudbury residents who voted so overwhelmingly for the rail trail questions on the town ballot. I'm going to walk you from the north to give you a status of the trail and give you a sense of why this is important to Sudbury. Here is the construction, the section of the trail that has been completed to date. And this is what it looks like. The folks in Chelmsford and Westford just think this is a really great trail. And this actually is an unusual picture because there's nobody on it. Usually a lot of people on the trail love it, walking, biking, and so on. Now, it has been built to the Massachusetts Department of Transportation standards, which means it is safe, it accommodates a wide range of users, and it's something that must be done, the design must be done in that fashion in order to receive state and federal funds. And the design and construction were sensitive to the environment. There were a lot of issues of wetlands and streams and so on, not unlike the situation in Sudbury. And it's not that these things are just straightforward. No, they take a lot of thought before they're done carefully. There is a residual issue at the south end of the first section of parking. There is no parking at the current terminus at 225, and that's caused a certain amount of consternation. But let me move on to the next slide. This is the section that is going to be starting construction in 2014, and the construction of this section will remove the parking issues at the south end of the first part of the trail because there is a section set aside for parking in Acton, just south of 225. So this is going to go forward. And by the way, this project, this construction, was moved up by almost a decade because the state officials think this is such an important project and they want to keep it moving along. Now we go to the next section of the trail. This is Concord. Concord is currently in the final design stages. And the prospect exists for moving this project forward, much like the Concord, the Acton section was moved forward on the state's plan. Now, if this construction takes place, that'll bring the trail right down close to Sudbury. So let's have the next slide. So right up there on the top is the little red section. That's what Article 35 is all about. It's about the first half mile from the Concord town line down to Route 117. And let me show you a photo of that crossing at 117. The dark lines represent where the railroad tracks are. There is a sidewalk currently existing along the south side of Route 117, not shown in this photograph. It was taken earlier. There will be a crossing signal at 117, so people will be able to come down to that point, get on the sidewalk, and go to all kinds of roads in Sudbury and also park at Davis Field. Now, that has raised an issue because there's some concern about parking at Davis Field. But I point out that if the entire trail is built, that parking issue will be greatly relieved. So at any rate, let's go on to the next slide. Why design that first half mile? Well, if we design the segment to Mass DOT standards, it qualifies for Mass state and federal funding. It is consistent with the trail to the north. It will bring the trail from Powder Mill Road in Concord down to 117 because the Sudbury town line is right in the middle of the woods. It would not stop there unless this section is built. And it will give Sudbury residents direct access to 17 miles of rail trail to the north. Now, can I have the next slide? Now, here's Article 34, which talks about the entire trail. And when the issue of funding for construction and design of the first half mile came up, the Board of Selectmen said, gee, why don't we ask the town whether we should have a rail trail along the entire state-owned section? So let me note that that east-west dark line is so-called Mass Central Wayside Rail Trail. That trail is going to be built by the Department of Conservation and Recreation. That will be out of the hands of Sudbury.
Mr. Williamson?
Two slides.
Just tell me how much longer.
2 minutes.
Does the hall wish to give Mr. Williamson 2 minutes to speak? Raise your cards. Those opposed? Go ahead, Mr. Williamson.
Okay, if we look at the end of that green section on the next slide, this is what it looks like. Yeah, there's the limo station right there at Chiswick Park, and it lays out the ownership of the sections of rail bed. And I note the Department of Conservation and Recreation's rail trail, which will be built. And from that dotted line north, it's owned by the state, who will lease it to the town for no cost to build a rail trail. So let me go to this next slide. Why do we want a rail trail at all? Well, there's a whole bunch of things that are mentioned here. Exercise and health is surely one part of it. Lots of transportation benefits. I list a whole bunch of things that you can get to along the rail trail. Finally, it's not just the bike path, but it's a facility for all kinds of different activities. So let me have the next slide. So I think it's time for Sudbury to get moving. The issues in Sudbury have been faced by the other towns to the north and have generally been solved. And Sudbury has to pay only for the design of a rail trail, does not have to pay for the construction, and the design funds can come out of the CPA if the town so desires. And there's lots of support at the state level for the rail trail. So if Sudbury says that we're positive about it, like Acton said they were positive about it, it's a good chance it'll move along. So in conclusion, the last slide. Thank you.
Ms. Brown? And if you need it, you'll get the same time.
this is awesome. Okay.
My name is Pat Brown. I've served on the Rail Trail Conversion Advisory Committee since its inception in 2004 and as chair since 2006. I've spent a lot of time studying rail trail issues in Sudbury, and I represent some of the committee members, including myself, who urge a defeat of these articles. Article 34 asks whether Sudbury should create a recreational trail. Yes is the right answer, and no is the right vote. No on 34 is not a vote against a recreational trail. It's a vote against a MassDOT 14-by-10-foot hole on the center of town to pave a road through the woods. That's the only way state and federal funds will cover the entire cost of construction, as project proponents claim. There are issues we need to consider prior to design. There is no legal access or parking at the southern terminus. Using commercial parking along Route 20 is bad for business. The trail will end at the MBTA crossing because the town of Sudbury has been unable to complete a purchase of the right-of-way south of Route 20. Seven of Sudbury's farms lie along this right-of-way. These are large parcels. If one or more is sold for development because of farmers' fears about the effects of trails on the ability to farm, the ongoing cost to Sudbury taxpayers from this residential development will dwarf the official rail trail construction costs. We presumably have wetlands issues. Everyone does. We know, however, that Concord has specifically exempted their rail trail from their local wetlands bylaws. Sudbury, we know, has wildlife issues which cannot be mitigated and call for an investigation of alternative rail alignments bypassing the sensitive areas. And at very least, if we assign town staff to this project, we need to remove them from what they're currently working on and free them up to work with the state, possibly for decades. I ask you to vote no for a MassDOT trail on Article 34. Article 35 is an offer to design a one-half-mile trail extension from the Concord border to Route 117. It was precipitated by an offer from the Friends of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail to raise $50,000 for a MassDOT 25% design for this extension. The offer was named Bring the Trail to Sudbury. That is the section. The offer was named Bring the Trail to Sudbury, but most Sudbury residents will have to drive to Davis Field Park. It doesn't actually bring the trail to Sudbury. It brings it over the Concord border. What it does do is it brings Concord's trail parking to Sudbury. Concord declines to provide trail parking near the terminus at the Sanborn Middle School. They instead suggest we use the Davis Field parking lot. Sudbury uses the Davis Field parking lot for athletic activities. We should not provide trail parking at the terminus for Concord that Concord will not provide. We risk losing control of what is built in Sudbury. The Commonwealth owns the rail right-of-way, not the town. The way the process works, the Commonwealth views Sudbury's participation in a 25% design as a demonstration of our commitment to a MassDOT trail. Construction of the half-mile segment can be pursued not as Sudbury's project, but as an extension of the regional trail to address the lack of parking provided at the trail terminus by Concord. The Friends promise that if Sudbury doesn't like the 25% design, Sudbury doesn't have to proceed is true. But with Sudbury's 25% design to MassDOT standards, Concord or MassDOT can construct the extension without us. We should not permit an outside advocacy group to have undue influence. The Friends are a highly enthusiastic, disciplined, and effective single-issue advocacy group whose mission is to build a rail trail. But the town of Sudbury has to balance multiple demands and prioritize projects and adapt to changing needs. If we accept the Friends' money, we accept the Friends' specific MassDOT trail design and give it the support of the town. The Friends are not donating to an existing town project. They are advancing their own priorities. We should not permit this outside group to drive this project. When I first interviewed for the Rail Trail Committee in 2004, my stated goal was a trail that was not just another road through the woods. For Sudbury to design its own trail appropriate to local conditions and values, please vote no on Articles 34 and 35. Thank you.
Okay. Again, there will be no debate because this is non-binding on whether it goes forward or doesn't go forward, but Selectman has put forward these questions, so we're going to vote on them. So the first one we'll vote on is 34, which is to advise the Selectman whether to create this rail trail in Sudbury, the whole rail trail. All those in favor of Article 34 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. Can we now vote on 35? 35 says to advise the Selectman whether to move forward with designing the rail trail from the Concord border a half a mile to Davis Field in Sudbury. All those in favor of 35 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. Try that one more time. All those in favor of 35 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than a majority. Thank you all very much for attending. Do I have a motion to dissolve?
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes. Thank you all very much. Any town officials who have yet to be sworn in, please see the town clerk out front.